Times when I've wondered whether my learned friends in much of the media have taken leave of their senses, it turns out that I have, and a story that I didn't think was particularly pungent turns out to have not just legs, but very, very long legs indeed. But I'm very, very reluctant to say that I think I understand this stuff rather better than all the people accusing Rachel Reeves of lying or having committed some egregious sin. You've got a man whose former school friends are queuing up to recall his quotes, jokes and end quotes about gas chambers and anti-Semitism, referring the Chancellor to the ethics advisor. Has the world gone completely mad, or are we perhaps missing something?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Keir Starmer will use a speech in the next hour to throw his support behind Rachel Reeves. The Chancellor has been accused of misleading the country about the state of the public finances in the run-up to the budget. Darren Jones is the Prime Minister's Chief Secretary. He has rejected claims it's an attempt to shore up a disastrous process.
The Prime Minister's been intending to give a speech post-budget for a little while, and he's doing so because, of course, the economy is still not firing on all cylinders. This government is absolutely focused on getting it into that place, and it's right that the Prime Minister's involved in that debate in the way that you would expect.
A public inquiry has heard claims special forces chiefs suppressed evidence of possible war crimes in Afghanistan. The testimony was given by a former senior officer as part of closed hearings about alleged murders by special forces between 2010 and 2013. The Labour MP, Tulip Siddiq, has been sentenced by a court in Bangladesh to 2 years in prison for corruption. She was tried in her absence over charges linked to her aunt, Sheikh Hasina, the country's deposed prime minister. The MP for Hampstead and Highgate has strongly denied wrongdoing. The US Secretary of State has warned there is more work to be done to secure a Russia-Ukraine peace deal. Marco Rubio's comments follow talks with a delegation from Kyiv in Florida. Ukraine's lead negotiator is Rustem Umerov.
We're thankful for the efforts of United States and its team to helping us. US is hearing us, US is supporting us, US is walking beside us. And we're thankful for all what has been done until today.
President Trump's special envoy, Steve Witkoff, is set to meet Vladimir Putin in Moscow in the coming days. Temporary staff hired to cover Birmingham bin strikers are joining them on picket lines this morning. It marks the first day of industrial action by the agency refuse workers. The wider strike began in January as part of a pay row with Birmingham City Council. And the latest word of the year has been revealed. Oxford University Press has chosen Ragebait, which is online content deliberately designed to provoke outrage. It says usage has increased threefold in the last 12 months. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was at 97.14. That is down 6. The pound buys $1.32 and a euro 14. LBC weather, wet and windy for most areas. The rain heaviest in South Wales, where there is an amber warning in place, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
The EasyJet Black Friday sale just got bigger. Now up to 20% off flights. Long weekend in Florence, anyone? Or maybe a ski trip to Switzerland? Don't miss out. Sale ends Tuesday. Book now at easyjet.com. Get out there. Selected dates. Sale ends 11 p.m. the 2nd of December. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 10. A very good morning indeed to you. It is, believe it or not, the first day of December. I've just had one of those ideas that arrives a little bit too late, and then even if it had arrived on time, I'd have forgotten. We should do an advent calendar on the radio. I bet nobody else has ever done that before, hey? I bet that's a sparkling, original, brand-new idea. But it's too late now, because it's December the 1st. Unless one of my esteemed colleagues can come up with some production by the end of the show today, someone else can have that idea. Alert Sheila, alert Swarbrick. They can do an advent calendar on the radio. What have we found today? I used to like the ones with chocolates, didn't you? What's that story? Forget, it's a fable. And there's like a, I can't remember what it is. It's like a crocodile and a something furry. And the crocodile offers to give the furry thing a lift across the river. And the furry thing says, please promise you won't eat me. Promise you won't. And they may even do some sort of deal. Like, if you take me to the other side of the river, I'll give you all my, I don't know, nuts. And then halfway across, the crocodile eats the furry thing, and they say, why are you eating me? And he goes, because I'm a crocodile. What is that? So I tried to find it. I Googled it, unsuccessfully. But what is the original version of that tale? Is it the frog and the scorpion? Thank you, Emma. The frog and the scorpion. Could somebody please bring me the details of the tale of the frog and the scorpion? So there is neither a furry thing nor a crocodile in my story, but Emma has somehow managed to cut through the absurdities of my brain and deliver what it... Well, no wonder I couldn't find it on Google. I was looking for crocodiles and koala bears at one point. It's a frog and a scorpion. Why am I... Oh, God, everyone's cleverer than me, except Roddy. Is it not a fox and a rabbit? I don't know that. Anyway. Or a duck and a snake. Good Lord. My inbox currently looks like the world's worst menu. It's a frog and a scorpion. It's not a bird. It's a scorpion and a frog, or a frog and a scorpion, whatever you prefer. Would you like to know why I'm thinking of the frog and the scorpion this morning? I certainly would. I hope I can remember. Don't ring in on this one. We need our switchboard shortly for the proper grown-up phone-in. Do not ring in to this phone-in. Do not. Martha, go and make a cup of tea or something, or work on your novel. There's no need for you to pick up these calls from people ringing in to say it's a frog and a scorpion. No offense, Sarah, thank you, but no thank you. The reason why I'm thinking of it is, and this is going to sound really odd, but it's one of those mornings where public discourse seems to be pointless. It's one of those mornings where I channel Logan Roy and say, you are not serious people. And I'd much rather say the other catchphrase, but unfortunately Ofcom has thoughts on whether or not I can say live on the radio at 10:06 in the morning. And you can see it, particularly at the BBC these days, is that if there are enough front pages of the newspapers banging a certain drum, it takes editorial confidence to swim in the other direction. And unfortunately, the BBC, particularly the Sunday morning programme with Laura Koenigsberg, has no editorial confidence. Having been groomed and gaslit for so long by Boris Johnson, they've forgotten which way is up, which way is down, which way is left, but sadly not which way is right. And you know, you've got two front pages today reporting with a straight face that Nigel Farage, a man whose former school friends are currently queuing up to recall his quotes, jokes, end quotes, his alleged quotes, jokes, end quotes, about gas chambers and sundry other examples of absolutely rancid racism. He is referring somebody else or reporting somebody else to the ethics committee or the ministerial advisor, the independent ethics advisor. Nigel Farage reporting someone to an ethics... Can we just take a moment to laugh our socks off at that idea? A man who's, like, closest friend in Wales was taking bribes from the Kremlin that he supposedly knew absolutely nothing about, despite having described Vladimir Putin as the politician in the world he admires the most. He's referring somebody else to the independent ethics advisor, which, don't forget, until relatively recently, right-wingers in the media said, we don't need one. We don't need one, which was the only way of covering up the fact that their hero, Boris Johnson, had actually presided over the resignation of two for not having any ethics or indeed integrity. So, funny moments, right? Nigel Farage referring anyone to the ethics advisor. Seriously, he'll be accusing people of racism next, and clutching his pearls in the process. But if you have enough front pages, the Daily Express, if she had any decency, she would be gone now. Who are they quoting? Oh, Kemi Badenoch. Oh, Lord above. And on it goes. Not so much the cheaper prints, but nonetheless, the rest of the papers have gone for it, inevitably. They'll all be owned by the same bloke soon. That's something to look forward to. And yet, the facts of the matter are pretty straightforward. So here's what I found myself thinking this morning. And this is why I was thinking of the frog and the scorpion. People who wanted a rather better first innings from this government, people who voted Labour in the hope of slightly more visible improvement, okay? And listen, I don't want you to bombard me with a long list of all the good things that they've done. I have repeatedly read that list. I've repeatedly reminded people of the good things that have been done. But some of the mistakes, some of the avoidable and self-inflicted mistakes have been visible from space. Even with the distorting lens of an entirely corrupt media, the idea that competence and transparency have been clear and present in the case of the current government is unfortunately pie in the sky. infinitely better than any of the available alternatives, obviously. Even now, with disappointment weighing heavily upon our collective shoulders, the idea of going back to a Truss or a Johnson or, God forbid, a Farage is obviously, to anyone with a functioning cerebral cortex, a hideous prospect. But, as I never tire of pointing out to you, 80-90% of the UK media lacks a functioning cerebral cortex. And the reason why I'm thinking of The Frog and the Scorpion, first found, of course, in Lev Nitterberg's 1933 novel, The German Quarter, but you knew that, is that I don't understand why the Boris Johnson fanboys, the Liz Truss admirers, the austerity champions, the Brexit cheerleaders, I don't understand why they're going after the current government, particularly the female members of the current government, most obviously, of course, Angela Rayner and Rachel Reeves, with such epic vitriol. Because those of us who recognise the necessity of giving somebody else a chance after that quadruple hit that I've just run you through are not very impressed, generally speaking. The polling is absolutely appalling, for good or for ill. You can't argue with that. You can if you're really boring, question the rubrics or the metrics which are deployed, but you just need to listen to conversations across the country or have a look at your social media, not the dirty, ugly sewer end of social media, which I'd heartily advise you to avoid. But very simply, the people you know having conversations that may be slightly ill-informed and, to be fair, may not. The star is beyond waning, isn't it? Keir Starmer's star is, I don't know what comes after waning. Extinguishing? I don't know. But I kind of sat here thinking, if I was a completely bent proponent of the last 14 years, if I was the kind of client journalist that had told you Boris Johnson was brilliant, Brexit was brilliant, Liz Truss was brilliant, austerity was brilliant, then what would I be doing today? I think about this more than is healthy, actually. What would I be doing today? Because I don't think I would be going after this government. Surely the worst thing that could happen from the point of view of the right and the far right, and it's increasingly, I don't even know what you'd call a right-wing party in this country anymore. You've got two far-right parties, effectively. But, Jenrick's party and Farage's party. But surely the worst thing that could happen from their point of view would be for Labour to have a bit of a refresh, a bit of a change of personnel, possibly even a leadership challenge. Because it's hard to imagine that things could be much worse in public polling and public perception. So I sit here thinking, why are all the Truss, Johnson, Brexit, austerity cheerleaders being so vitriolic in their pursuit of the women, particularly in the Labour government, but the Labour government per se? And I think it's the Scorpion and the Frog. So the Frog asks the Scorpion to carry him across the river. He says, please don't sting me. The Scorpion says, I won't sting you, because if I sting you, we'll both die. The Frog is carrying the Scorpion. That's the bit of the story that I got wrong. Of course I'm not going to sting you, because you're a frog, and you're carrying me across the river, and if I sting you, we both die. And halfway across the river, the Scorpion decides to sting the Frog. And as they both prepare to drown to death, the Frog asks why, and the Scorpion says, that's who I am. I'm a scorpion. It's what I do. So I look at the absolutely desperate attempts by right-wing media this morning to accuse Rachel Reeves of something or other, and I just think that's what you do, is it? You're just a scorpion stinging a frog. I mean, it doesn't fully work, this analogy, because I don't think they both end up sinking or anything like that. If you're on the payroll of Viscount Rothermere or Rupert Murdoch or whoever it is, then you can be wrong about everything for your entire career. Sorry, I should include the Daily Telegraph in that. And, of course, some broadcasters. You can be wrong about absolutely everything in your entire career and not suffer any consequences whatsoever. All of the massive, massive Boris Johnson and Liz Truss fans queuing up today to attack Rachel Reeves, if they had an iota of integrity, they'd be reporting themselves to the ethics advisor. But that doesn't matter. It's important to keep pointing it out, but you can't pretend it's ever going to matter as much as it should. Why, when Labour supporters are deeply disillusioned with Labour, are these clowns still going after Rachel Reeves? And Angela Rayner's back in the news today for something to do with her council tax on her Grace and Favour apartment. I kid you not. Hold the front page. Don't talk about Russian interference in UK politics or mysterious house purchases in Frinton-on-Sea. Don't talk about judges being attacked after Honest Bob Jenrick, or at least threatened after Honest Bob Jenrick started demonising them and threatening to make lists of them. But no, let's talk about Angela Rayner's council tax again, or Rachel Reeves's rent, or this claim that there was a lie in the, I suppose in the analogy, the whole country drowns, doesn't it, if the scorpion keeps stinging the frog. So last week, we were being told that Rachel Reeves was absolutely awful, and that the only reason why the economy was in such a mess, that she needed to raise more money, was because of her appalling mismanagement. And it was pointed out, of course, that everything from Brexit to COVID had helped create, and the war in Ukraine, had helped create a series of conditions that demanded some fairly hefty fiscal intervention. And we were told it's nothing to do with Brexit, it's nothing to do with COVID, it's nothing to do with Boris Johnson, it's nothing to do with Liz Truss, and it's nothing to do with the war in Ukraine. It's all because, misogyny warning, Rachel from accounts is so bad at what she does. That is literally how you went to bed on Friday, or perhaps at least Thursday, or how we finished the show on Friday. Misogyny trigger warning. Rachel from accounts, end of trigger warning, is so awful at this that she's messed everything up and now she has to raise more money through our taxes. That is literally what you went to bed believing on Thursday night. And so, of course, did all the people who woke up on this morning and suddenly decided that actually the economy was in a fantastic shape and she lied about how bad it was in order to bring in those raises which she brought in on Thursday. Oh, and let's not mention that incredible leak, that unprecedented leak, which the bloke who revealed on Friday the apparent lie was entirely responsible for. Don't look over there, look over here. I think that's what's going on. I know that the reasons why Rachel Reeves was compelled to raise so much money in her budget are fairly well documented. The U-turns that she undertook on both the winter fuel allowance and on personal independence payments. So previous forecasts accommodated the money she expected to save from that. She U-turned on them both, in the first case, largely under pressure from the right-wing media, and therefore the money she was expecting to raise from that policy is no longer going to be raised. That, as far as I could tell, is missing from the OBR forecasts that were, quotes, revealed, end quotes, on Friday, except, of course, they weren't revealed. They were already in the public space. Then you've got the determination to have more headroom, which is kind of like the money you have in case a war starts or a pandemic hits. And without the raises that she introduced on Thursday, it would have stood just north of $4 billion, and she wants it to be north of $10 billion. She wants the headroom to be big enough to accommodate the kind of shocks to the system that you'd think we'd have got used to over the last 5 years, given that we've had two absolutely enormous ones. The scrapping of the two-child limit on benefits. You can chalk that up as welfare, but if you're going to talk about how these tax raises are designed to increase the welfare bill, don't mention the fact, I think the old age pension has just nudged into the above the 50% of the overall bill territory. So if you're going to start wanging on about welfare, remember that 40% of people on universal credit are in work, 60% of the families with more than two children are in work, and the majority, if not damned close to the majority, of, quotes, welfare payments goes to old age pensioners. You've also got a little bit more spending on higher local government costs. So, and also the idea that she'd sit in cabinet and lay out all of the detail that she was in possession of is hilarious, because it would be leaked to the media before people had actually got off the bus home, in the event of them actually catching buses home instead of taking advantage of their ministerial cars. I don't think we can do a phone in on why the scorpion keeps stinging the frog, because I honestly think I've solved that, sadly. It might have been quite interesting, but it's not a phone-in anymore. Why does the scorpion keep stinging the frog, even though they're both going to drown? Because that's what scorpions do. That's what, you know, that's what Rod Liddell does. That's what Paul Dacre does. That's what Daniel Hannan does. They just sting the frog. They don't know what else to do. Fast rewind a couple of pages. It's Boris Johnson's brilliant. Liz Truss is a genius. We love austerity. Brexit's going to be great. Fast forward, still getting paid, still on the payroll, still with the same job description, still got the columns, still got the job titles, different government, sting the frog, sting the frog, sting the frog. It's what we do. Don't ask why, don't ask how, don't ask whether the frog deserves to be stung. It's just what I do. I am a dispenser of poison, and I've been paid a fortune by Viscount Rothermere, whoever owns the Telegraph this week, or Rupert Murdoch. So what is the phone in today? I've got absolutely no idea. It's already 20 past 10. Keith's having an embolism. You don't know what we're talking about. And I am doing the thing I always warn you against doing, which is following an agenda that's been sent by completely bent newspapers pretending that Rachel Reeves has committed a heinous crime without really being able to provide the detail of what that heinous crime is. So that's where we'll start. What is the heinous crime? 0345 6060 973. Given that the money raised on Friday, on Thursday, will go largely to plugging the holes caused by the U-turns on the PIP and winter fuel allowances, the determination to increase the headroom, the fiscal headroom, to in excess of £10 billion, the scrapping of the two-child limit on universal credit benefit for subsequent children, and a few bits and bobs about higher local government costs. What exactly are we supposed to be furious about when we look at front pages saying Reeves must face Sleaze probe over budget lies, or Reeves face ethics probe over budget lies? Two stories in the Mail and the Telegraph built entirely upon the fact that the single most dishonest man in the history of British politics, allegedly, Nigel Farage, is referring someone else to the Ethics Committee. The Telegraph and the Mail, soon to be owned by the same person, are pretending that the biggest story in the national news is a man who couldn't even spot a recipient of bribes from a Kremlin stooge in his own contacts book, close friendship circle, party and, indeed, mentorship. He gets to refer someone else to the ethics programme, and the clowns that edit these two newspapers pretend that that is the biggest story in town. So if you needed proof that they were desperate to pin something on Rachel Reeves without being able to tell you what it is, there's your proof. Nigel Farage is referring them to the ethics person that we didn't think we should have an ethics person, because we're currently paying £500,000 a year to the former Prime Minister, who fell so foul of his ethics advisers that two of them resigned in disgust. But today, it's really important. It's really important. I think my readers are really, really stupid. So we're paying the man whose ethics advisers resigned in disgust, but today we're pretending it's really bad when Nigel Farage refers someone to the ethics adviser. Phone lines are open. What exactly am I supposed to be angry about today? And yeah, I think this is going to be a topic that we do quite often in the coming months, because the other bit I don't understand is that with a general election just under 4 years away, why does the scorpion keep stinging the frog? Let's see if that is enough of an introduction to prompt you to get involved. What am I supposed to be angry about today? Okay. Last week, the economy was in a very, very deep hole, and it was all Rachel Reeves' fault. This week, the economy is not in a very, very deep hole, and it's all Rachel Reeves' fault. What am I supposed to be angry about? And why do these jokers in the media persist in going after this government in such a weird and vitriolic way? That's a genuine question. It might just be the scorpion stinging the frog, but you've probably got something a bit more intelligent to say. Oh, and the budget was on Wednesday, not Thursday, but that was a deliberate mistake, just inserted into the programme to make sure that you were paying attention. Why? And what? What am I supposed to be angry about today? Because it's up for grabs, my anger. And why do they keep going after them with such an extraordinary level of vitriol when the evidence doesn't seem to support the agenda? 0345 6060 973.
LBC.
They live in you.
A spectacle far beyond your imagination.
They live in me.
Be amazed. Be moved.
They're watching over.
Be there.
Everything we see.
For an experience that will stay with you forever.
In every creature.
Disney's The Lion King.
In every star.
At London's Lyceum Theatre.
They live in you.
Book now at thelionking.co.uk.
My beans have been to Mexico. They once went to Peru. My beans, they flew to Portugal, then went to Tuvalu. My beans were with me in Italy, then came with me to Greece. I slurped their sauce on Spanish shores. I nibbled them in Nice. My Heinz beans have seen the world. They've traveled far and wide, because they are, as we all know, too good to leave behind.
Okay, let me stop you there, sir. You still have to check them into the hold.
Oh, all right then. Honestly.
Beans means Heinz.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P.
Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks.
T. Drop up on island fuel. R. Rest every 2 hours too. I. Inspect tire pressure and tread. P. Prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P.
Oh, yes.
A safe trip begins with
T-R-I-P.
Do the 4 trip checks before every long journey. National Highways.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345-6060973.
And this is the bit I love the most, I think. And Idiot's Corner will be bouncing today. It'll be jumping in Idiot's Corner today. Because when I say to you, what am I supposed to be angry about? And you are very angry with Rachel Reeves. And you suddenly realise that you don't know why. And you can't ring me to tell me. Because none of this really makes much sense. Last week you were furious with her because the economy was in a very deep hole. And this week you're furious with her because the economy's not in a very deep hole. So you're feeling a little bit stupid. At which point the tradition demands you insult me. Okay, so I say, what am I supposed to be angry about? And you've realised you don't know, but your anger is so precious to you because I don't know why. It's all you've got, perhaps, or it keeps you warm at night. So Stephen Guildford, first out of the traps. Deflection tactics. It's clear as day you are trying to avert our gaze from wrongdoing, is Steve's answer to the question of what is the wrongdoing. What's the wrongdoing, Steve? What am I supposed to be angry about? Which of course means, what are you angry about? Which of course means you've just looked in the mirror and seen a very angry man looking back, but you can't answer the question of what you're supposed to be angry about, because you've been mugged, misled, gaslit, groomed, call it what you will, but here we are. And unless, of course, you can tell me what the wrongdoing is, but I can't help thinking, Steve-o, that if you could tell me what the wrongdoing was, you would have put it in your message. Phone lines are open. Sean's in Birmingham. Sean, what have you got?
Hello, James. I hope you're doing well today. I
absolutely bouncing, Sean. Go on.
No, I was having to think of this as you were talking, and I think it's actually the fact that their sort of theories of how to approach the economy are so similar that they're fighting against. So what Rachel Reeves is doing, Kemi Badenoch made a statement on LBC the other day, and she was saying that the economy, the bond markets don't care about how much money's in your pocket. They care about how much growth we've got and that everything adds up. And Rachel Reeves is essentially, as far as I can say, doing that exact same approach. And it hasn't failed so far. The Conservatives and the media were all telling us before the election, all Labour are going to increase taxes substantially and everything's going to get so much worse than if it was under the Tories. And I think if you look at where we are today, I don't think you can say it would be any better under the Tories doing that same approach.
Well, they did it really, really badly. I think you're knocking at the door that I tried to draw obliquely in my endless introduction this morning, which is because what we can't escape from is the epic unpopularity of this government. And listen, you can remind me until you're blue in the face about the unlevelness of the playing field that they're on. But that is just a fact of life. And so is the epic unpopularity. Whether it's fair or not, it's very, very real. And it makes it odd that these people are chomping at the bit every single day to try to hurt a desperately unpopular government, because with the election so far away, you'd think, well, never interrupt your enemy when they're making a mistake, right? That's what we've always been taught. But they keep interrupting the enemy, which makes me wonder whether, actually, they're doing a rather better job than even some of their own admirers realise, their own detractors and former admirers realise. And this sounds a little bit nuts, but it leads us to where you've started your contribution, which is with the idea that she's managed to keep her own party and the bond markets happy with this budget while also raising 26 billion quid. So what's not to like?
Well, this is it. But I mean, from my perspective, the increase in the pension threshold, that's going to impact me, the freeze on the tax threshold.
Yeah, I'm getting impacted. Issue. Don't get me wrong, I'm going to get hit by the mansion tax as well. Not many of them in Birmingham. That's a joke. That's a joke. No. That's a joke. Edgbaston and Solihull, full of them. Full of them.
Yes. No, Sutton Coldfield, Four Oaks as
Sutton
well.
Coldfield, yes, exactly.
But I think the issue that the general public have is that they're tinkering at the edges rather than giving us this radical change that they ran on. But I think the media are struggling to approach that, because you can't moan at Labour for taking new approaches, because the most radical thing they've done is the two-child cap in the sense of...
Well, you say the general public. You mean people who were expecting a little more from Labour in terms of perhaps their own lives. They're not exactly over the moon. But in terms of keeping the ship afloat and you know, setting a steady course, they're not actually doing any of the things that their detractors said they were going to do. Keeping the bond markets happy, which, of course, Liz Truss wrote the book on not doing, and keeping the party happy, which is an integral and essential part of government with the lifting of the two child cap and not increasing income tax. This time last week, or well, this time last month, the mooted increase in income tax, which again I was in favour of, even though it would have hit me, the increase in income tax never actually happened. So, I mean, sometimes when there is an almost united voice across the front pages of the newspapers, you can't help thinking that you must be the one that's wrong, you must be the one that's gone mad, and they're all sane. But actually, this is just sort of desperate screaming at the moon, isn't it? All this stuff. She lied! She lied. What did she lie about? The reasons for increasing income tax. She didn't increase income tax. What are you angry about?
This is it. Well, like I say, the right-wing media is what the best at screaming about.
What are you angry about? Well, you need to tell me what I'm supposed to be angry about. Come on, Stephen Guildford. Deflection tactics, he writes. It's clear as day. You're trying to avert our gaze from the wrongdoing, says a man who can't name the wrongdoing. And, of course, all the people writing the front pages or calling Rachel Reeves a liar, ask them to nail down exactly what it is that she's done wrong. And I think the best they've got is that she exaggerated the doom and gloom surrounding the economy when she was softening us up for income tax rises. To which the response is, isn't it? Again, unless I'm missing something, you say, well, she didn't raise income taxes. So what are you complaining about? Well, she might have. Yeah, but she didn't. So what are you angry about? Seriously. 0345 6060 973. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
The senior government minister, Darren Jones, has told LBC that Rachel Reeves did not mislead the public in the run-up to the budget. Sir Keir Starmer is delivering his speech in London, backing the Chancellor and her economic plan. The Labour MP, Tulip Siddiq, has been sentenced to 2 years in prison by a court in Bangladesh. She was tried in her absence over corruption claims linked to her aunt, Sheikh Hasina, the country's deposed prime minister. A public inquiry has heard there was a conscious decision to cover up potential war crimes in Afghanistan. The testimony was given by a former senior officer as part of closed hearings about alleged murders by special forces. LBC weather, wet and windy for most areas. There is an amber alert for heavy rain in South Wales, a high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Laithwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide, searching high, and we mean really high, and low, and we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf, we don't go there. Off the beaten track, we certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at laithwaites.co.uk. Laithwaites. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
My beans have been to Mexico. They once went to Peru. My beans, they flew to Portugal, then went to Tuvalu. My beans were with me in Italy, then came with me to Greece. I slurped their sauce on Spanish shores. I nibbled them in Nice. My Heinz beans have seen the world. They've travelled far and wide because they are, as we all know, too good to leave behind.
Okay, let me stop you there, sir. You still have to check them into the hold.
Oh, all right then. Honestly.
Beans means Heinz.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
New In, the latest custom-fit rechargeable hearing devices. Discreet, comfortable and smart enough to help you catch every moment. Book a free hearing test at bootshearingcare.com. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10:33 is the time and I want to be angrier. But I'm not quite sure what I'm supposed to be angry about. Just for the avoidance of doubt, I don't do misogyny, so Rachel from accounts doesn't make me angry enough. I did think that the economy was in a rather worse state than it's turned out to be, so I shouldn't really be angry about that. I should be celebrating, possibly even giving Rachel Reeves a pat on the back for having presided over, although I don't know that the fact that a rise in inflation has driven a rise in wages, which has driven a rise in the tax take, is necessarily something you can lay at her door or indeed cause for celebration. But I understand why the changes that she made to our economy last Wednesday were made, and I understand the arguments or the claims from the OBR regarding productivity upgrades and revisions, but here's the bottom line. The reason why she introduced the things that she introduced, most obviously the freezing of income tax thresholds, but not as many of us were expecting, and in fact as we were right to expect. Hey, look, lots to criticise. Stop leaking all the time. Stop saying in, out, shake it all about. It's pathetic. Absolutely breathtakingly awful comms. Just keep shtum. Stop giving us heads up. Stop calling bloody press conferences and then doing nothing except serve up bowls of Cheerios. It's ridiculous. Said so at the time, saying so now. You don't have to be wearing a scarf tied tightly round your neck in order to recognise that Rachel Reeves has presided over an appalling miscommunication and failure to provide clarity. But in terms of what I'm supposed to be angry about today, well, I keep trying to find out. The welfare U-turns costing a lot of money that the OBR didn't take into account. The determination to have £10 billion plus in headroom in order to be able to cope better with things like wars and pandemics. The scrapping of the two-child limit. In other words, dragging 450,000 children out of poverty. And then some bits and bobs on local government costs. All of which have been funded by tax rises that were not as violent as we feared they would, as many as we were told they would be, by people who, like me, were convinced that income tax was going to go up. So what are we supposed to be angry about today? 10:35 is the time. Sharon is in Bristol. Sharon, what would you like to say?
Okay, well, my opinion is that the issue with the budget was there was no kind of dream or vision in terms of making things better. So, for instance...
Right, except for the children living in poverty.
Yes, but in the long term, is that going to help them? The reason I say this is because we need to increase productivity per capita, and there was nothing in the budget to increase productivity per capita. Everybody who is a normal person would want children to have a better quality of life. Everybody would want children not to be hungry, to be properly housed, to have a decent education, not just in this world, but actually, sorry, in this country, but worldwide. But the bottom line is...
I really hope there wasn't going to be a but then. Because there shouldn't be, should there?
No.
Well, it'll be the fifth or sixth biggest economy in the world at the moment.
Yeah, but...
And you're talking about dragging... We'd love to drag children out of poverty, but...
No, we're one of the biggest economies because we have a large population. But if you actually, you know, we're also a heavily populated country.
Yeah, that's not why we've got a big economy. There's countries that are much bigger than ours with smaller economies.
Yeah, but also partly.
Okay.
but the issue is we have got an issue with productivity in this country.
Yeah. So what would have improved productivity?
I just think that when we took that tax take and
because you know that the scandal everybody else is talking about is the fact that productivity is better than we thought.
Yeah, but it's not per capita better. That's the issue. It's increased because we've got more people in the country, but per capita hasn't increased.
No, the productivity OBR forecast, the reason why every front page is calling Rachel Reeves a liar is because wages went up as a consequence of inflation, which meant that the productivity forecasts got better.
I think it's the amount of output that we have and the amount of money that we generate.
Okay, well, let's go back to the original question. Then, what kind of thing could she have announced that would have? I mean, you're not really telling me why I'm supposed to be angry, but tell me what you'd like her to have introduced Wednesday that she didn't.
Well, things that are going to stimulate the economy, such as a decent house building program, maybe.
Well, they've announced that already.
Well, again, more stimulus. Well,
that's one of the biggest and first announcements that they made was 1.5 million houses to be built in the course of this parliament. And it's literally their biggest. I mean, it's unlikely they're going to achieve it, but they're probably going to get over 1 million, which has got to be a good thing. So, respectfully,
there's very little.
Well, you can't just gloss over the fact that the first thing you've mentioned they've already done because that speaks
of. But they haven't because okay. Homes England.
So I said, what should they announce? What should they have announced on Wednesday? And you said a massive house building program, and I said they've already announced that.
Well, they may have announced it, but it's not actually happening. So they do.
But they couldn't do that on Wednesday, could they? The question was, what should they have announced on Wednesday? In the budget? You phoned in to talk to me about the budget.
Well, okay, I think...
So what should they have announced on Wednesday, apart from the massive house building plan that they've already announced?
I think they really need to look at the at employment, and the national insurance rise did not help employment.
Right.
We've got greater unemployment.
But you know that the reason why the OBR has revised its figures is because wages have gone up.
And at the same time, unemployment's gone up as well.
Well, to 5%.
Yeah, but we've also got one of the worst graduate years this year as well. Look, I'm not knocking Rachel Reeves.
I know you're not, and I'm not knocking you, but you're not telling me what I'm supposed... I mean, according to the front pages today, I'm supposed to be angry with her for lying to me, and what am I supposed to be angry with her about there?
You tell me, where do you see the growth happening?
No, but this is a different phone, and we had this phone in on Friday. I'm talking about the front pages that say, Reeves misled us over hole in finances. Farage, Reeves must face sleaze probe over budget lies. I'm not criticising you, because I've obviously not done a very good job of making it clear what today's phone-in is about. I probably should have done a longer introduction, Sharon. Reeves faces ethics probe over budget lies. So what am I supposed to be angry about in the context of these headlines?
What they are saying is the reason you should be is that there's going to be a fiscal tax drag, which is the equivalent of a tax rise, and that money is not being used to sort of hold up there's like a deficit, because there's a £4 billion potential fiscal headroom, but obviously we needed to have sort of like £15 to £20 million fiscal headroom,
which she's done.
Yeah, but she's done that. But yeah, and she's done that through the fiscal tax.
She's done that by raising money.
Yeah,
through freezing tax thresholds and a couple of other things. And
I guess what would have been nice is if that money has some money being raised, and in order to kind of increase, what I'm trying to say is increase jobs, industry, bringing more jobs onto this country. You know, for instance, did you know that we're investing in green energy? Did you know that our blades, you know, for the wind energy, they're actually created by a Dutch company.
Right.
You know, and so thinking, why is that happening? If we're investing in green energy, why are we not actually creating all the products?
Well, that's socialism. You mean you want the government to set up blade manufacturers?
Well, do something to encourage it in this country, just to encourage inward growth, you know, because we're not going to make people richer or better off unless we actually grow the economy. That's for me the worry, the concern. You know, I believe in investing in education. I believe in investing in people. The only other thing I would say also, which concerns me, is that, you know, if you look at the demographics, to what degree, I don't like to see children hungry. I don't like to see children in cold houses. But equally, I don't want to incentivize people who are impoverished to have like 5 kids. As opposed to having 3 kids, you know.
What would the incentive be, do you think?
I think it's a lack of education.
The incentive. So that people are likely to have another child because of the lifting of the two-child benefit cap.
And
60% of those families, of course, are in work.
Yeah. I
don't want to badger you, or I don't want you to go away feeling I've interrupted you too much, but you're not really ringing today's phone in, are you? Because we've done that as well. I've heard many people over the years explain how providing the poorest children in the country with support that will hopefully lead them to lead better and more fulfilling lives is incentivizing their parents, their feckless parents. I know you didn't use the word feckless. That's not fair. Incentivizing. Oh, you did say work ethic, though.
No, yeah. But no,
so you kind of meant feckless, didn't you? I know people get nervous.
You're actually putting words into my mouth, actually. And that's
did you not say work ethic?
No, but I said what I said is whether it's an incentive, basically, because we want all want the same thing.
I need to move on, but I don't want you to feel that you haven't had the chance to have your say. So, the phone-in that everyone else is having is, what are we supposed to be angry about in the context of Rachel Reeves apparently lying and being referred to the ethics advisor? So again, could you give us that in a sentence or two?
Well, I think that's basically just being used in order to have a go at Rachel Reeves personally.
There you go. Thank you. Have a great day. It's 10:43. Ray's in Haywards Heath. Ray, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James. First time caller. Real pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you, Ray. We'll see.
In actual fact, I was just going to make a small point, which at the very end of your last caller seemed to come up. I think what you're supposed to, I think with due respect, I think you've been looking in the wrong place. In fact, you're not, all you're supposed to be angry with, Labour.
Yeah.
If you, you know, if we look back to Brexit, for example, and I'm still furious about that, like you are, but if you look to the background for it, we had incessantly, for decades, drip of propaganda from the right-wing media, from Tories who didn't like it. We hardly ever heard anything that was positive about being in the EU or the Common Market.
I'm going to nudge you. I mean, I'm conscious of sounding like a right old bossy boots this morning with the last lady, but I need to remind you about the phone-in that we're having, Ray. About what am I supposed to be angry about today? The last thing I need is lectures on how bent the Brexit coverage was. I've written a bloody book about it.
Hey, all right, okay. But the whole business is we're talking about we've got is brainwashing, and it's an attack on thinking. You look at the front pages of the right wing media, and it's always going to be anti Labour this.
So it doesn't matter what they do; the scorpion will bite the frog.
Yeah, the thing it doesn't want people to do is readers to actually think. They just want to grab the headline and say, "Yeah, Labour."
So don't think. Whatever you do, don't stop and think. So
exactly.
If you stop and think, then
thinking, that's what brainwashing is.
And that is why the days when everybody else seems to be swimming in the other direction are the days when it's quite hard to hold on to the truth, as George Orwell cautioned us to do, because it's the only way not to go mad. What has Rachel Reeves done wrong? Answer, in the space of 3 days, she's gone from wrecking the economy and creating a black hole to presiding over an economy that there is no black hole in, and that is somehow even worse than when there was. But I don't understand that. Maybe he's right. Maybe Ray's right. The anger is the point. Whatever you do, don't ask questions about what you're supposed to be angry about, because if you do, either you'll stop being angry, which is what I hope we achieve during our time together in the mornings, or you'll somehow get even angrier with the person pointing out that you're not supposed to be angry. It's 10:45.
This is LBC.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad! Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. All wobbly, all wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friends, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Aerolux. That's Airalo.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
10:48 is the time, and it is frankly extraordinary that nobody can tell me what we are supposed to be angry about. This isn't a phone-in about what you are angry about. Loads of people queuing up to tell me that the government hasn't been radical enough, or they haven't gone far enough, or that they shouldn't have done the thing to national insurance or the farmers' inheritance tax. Those are all measurable. But I'm talking today about the monopoly, almost, of front pages, accusing Rachel Reeves of egregious sins. I think I saw one commentator at the weekend saying she should be in jail, or that she'd be lucky if this just ended with a political sanction. People who literally sat on their hands, and I think they actually sat on their hands. It's not a figure of speech. When Boris Johnson's ethics advisers were resigning almost every week in disgust at his personal and professional and political conduct, are now claiming that Rachel Reeves has done something awful. And I want you, in your own words, to tell me what that is. I understood what Angela Rayner was accused of doing. The fact that that counts as a breach of the ministerial code, and Priti Patel, for example, going to visit a foreign government without telling her own prime minister about it while she was in the cabinet, also constitutes a breach of the ministerial code. There should be a hierarchy or a league table of breaches of the ministerial code. It shouldn't be binary. Angela Rayner should categorically have worked a lot harder to establish if she was doing everything she needed to do when she bought her home in Brighton. And she didn't. She believed advice that was from someone not qualified to give that advice. And in fact, the person giving the advice didn't claim to be qualified to give it. So yes, that was a breach of the ministerial code. But it's the breach of the bit that says you've got to be better than the best. You've got to go further. You've got to be whiter than white. You've got to be cleaner than clean. You've got to be incredible. It's not good enough to do what is required of you. You've got to double check that more is not required. So that is good. Good politics. Good referral. Shame. I like Angela Rayner. But she had to go, right? Because she breached the ministerial code. And you could work out what it was that she'd done. And we said the day, 2 days before it happened, again, I didn't fully understand the story at the outset, but 2-3 days before she went, we said she's probably going to have to go. Because I can't quite see how she can explain doing something wrong that could have been avoided if she'd asked the right people for advice. What are we supposed to be angry about today? And the answer is either nobody knows, which sadly includes the angriest people, including people who do this for a living, people who, of course, found it all very hilarious when Boris Johnson was treating the ministerial code like a voodoo doll and sticking pins in it for fun. People who honestly couldn't tell you what they're supposed to be angry about, but whose business is stoking anger. Which brings us to the front pages. So desperate for something substantive to try to stick on Rachel Reeves that they've ended up citing a referral to the ethics advisor from Nigel Farage. The day upon which he is qualified to sit in judgment on anybody else's integrity and indeed ethics is the day upon which I will have 60 million bridges to sell the population of the United Kingdom. The Daily Telegraph and the Daily Mail, one of which, of course, pays a huge amount of money to the Prime Minister who broke the standards expected of him more egregiously than any Prime Minister in history. He's now a star columnist on the Daily Mail being paid a fortune. And the other newspaper probably bid for him at the time, but certainly were responsible for propelling him to public prominence. They are now claiming that we should all pay attention when Nigel Farage accuses somebody else of having poor ethics. A man who can't even remember whether or not he bought a house. In fact, forgot that he didn't. Claimed that he did, and later had to admit that he didn't. Claimed that he'd never barely knew who Nathan Gill was, and then we found all that footage of him talking about Nathan Gill in the way that most of us would reserve for our wives or husbands. And he now is what they've... So, in answer to the question of what am I supposed to be angry about, the answer is whatever Nigel Farage is angry about. But if you're going to be relying upon one of the most demonstrably dishonest people ever to join political discourse, the chances are you don't know what you're supposed to be angry about. But I still want you to tell me. Don't know? Nobody knows. Nobody knows. Except you, perhaps. 0345-6060-973. Matthew's in Southend. Matthew, what are we angry about? Sorry, what are we supposed to be angry about today?
Good morning. So hello. I'm going to do something dangerous and try and channel my inner James O'Brien.
Go on then. Oh dear.
I believe. So I believe that this is what I like to call funhouse mirror politics, where everything's recognisable but not quite right.
Yes.
Did the Chancellor lie? Well, I don't think she did, but then she didn't necessarily tell the whole truth. What she did was create the environment, the atmosphere. So she dimmed the lights, turned up the tension, whispered just loudly enough for the press to repeat it for her. She chose the bleakest parts of the forecast and held them up like holy relics and let the more reassuring details in the bottom of the drawer. So not a lie, but certainly not the full truth in its shape either. And it's the political equivalent of telling someone it's raining because you don't want them to look too closely at the leak in your own roof.
Mm.
And we've been conditioned to accept this, conditioned to shrug, conditioned to selective honesty for public service.
It was designed to soften us up for a raise in the income tax rates as well.
Yeah, but this isn't just about one chancellor. It's about one party. It's about our political class unshakable belief that the British public must be managed, massaged, nannied, and never really empowered with the full picture. So I think if we're going to be angry about anything, or what we should be angry about, is that the press are calling out Rachel Rees for using the same tricks the opposition, the former Conservative Party used, and they don't want her using the same tools.
I don't know that I agree with you. I understand your central grievance, which is about manipulation of statistics and facts, but I don't think you're doing her justice, because if you make a list of all the reasons why she had to raise taxes, the stuff that she's supposedly on the hook for today is only a part of it. She didn't exaggerate the impact of the U-turn on the winter fuel allowance. She didn't exaggerate the impact of the U-turn on PIP. She didn't exaggerate the cost of abolishing the cap on two-child benefits. And she didn't exaggerate the cost of imposing fiscal headroom that will allow us to cope a lot better with imminent threat or immediate threat to our economic health, be it a war or a pandemic or something else that might be on the horizon or might not. That's what the money is for. The only area of this in which she could stand accused of what you describe is an area in which the numbers did actually move, albeit that she didn't keep us up to date with all of those movements. They did actually move. And that's why I don't think it's fair to stick her on the same hook as previous governments, including the one that all the people attacking Rachel Reeves today were praising to the rafters when Liz Truss introduced her fiscal event, her fiscal catastrophe. Do you see what I mean? Even if you were right, it only applies to about 20% of the rationale for the budget last week, for last week's budget.
I mean, I don't agree with an awful lot of what you said, but writing a budget is an incredibly complicated thing,
and
I suppose a lot of the numbers do move on a quite regular basis. You know, every single time you ask an economist what the economy is going to be doing in 5 years' time, you'll get two different answers. One will say it's up, one will say it's down. And so, you know, whether or not she actually...
Yeah, but even that's not entirely true. But I take your point, forecasts are forecasts. It's funny how the OBR are now gospel again when they were warning about the impact of the of Brexit. All of the people who today are treating them like a cross between St. Paul and, I don't know, Buddha, were adamant that the OBR couldn't be trusted and should be abolished. And now they're back in the realms of the infallible. But yeah, you're right, forecasts are forecasts. But I don't know. I think I know where you're coming from on that they're all the same as each other stuff. But I'm not ready to join you in that place yet, because I honestly don't believe that they are. And if it were true, then we'd have to try to work out why, if the tactics are the same, why are the cheerleaders attacking one lot for having the same tactics as the lot that they praised to the rafters? I don't know, is the short answer. 10:57 is the time. Tim's in Crewe. Tim, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James. Nice to speak to you.
Likewise.
I think that the journalists are angry because they've been made to look stupid, and they're trying to wreak revenge. As Nick Robinson said on the radio this morning, he gave a slightly less hysterical take on this.
Good.
That what Rachel Rees did was effectively, you might say, lie by omission.
Yeah.
She didn't mention the increase in taxes. But that's the journalist's job. You know, politicians do leave things out. They tell you what they want you to hear. And journalists have to interpret that and fill in the gaps. They failed to do that. They jumped to the conclusion there'd be tax rises. And then when they weren't...
Well, this goes back to sorry to interrupt, but this is quite important. I think it was out there. Some of this information was already out there. And under your analysis, we missed it.
Yes, I think so. Because because there was already an agenda. It was thought, yes, there's going to be tax rises. This is going to be a terrible budget. This is going to destroy Labour and Reeves and Starmer.
Income tax. They're going to put up your income tax.
Yeah,
this is on November the 14th, right?
Yeah.
This is why they pay me the big bucks. You ready?
Yeah, go on.
The OBR delivered its latest judgment this week. This was on Bloomberg on November the 14th. The fourth in a round of five preliminary forecasts it privately prepares for the Treasury ahead of budgets. People familiar with the matter said those showed that strong wage growth offset some of the downgrade in productivity that had been expected to constrain the Chancellor. So it was reported. And the people writing front pages for the Daily Mail and the Daily Telegraph and the Daily Express or queuing up to call Rachel Reeves a liar, had they been paying attention, would have known that it had been reported. Now, you can say to her, she should have told us sooner or she should have told us per se, but it was out there. Bloomberg were reporting it and presumably others. So, I mean, you're being very generous to journalists by claiming that they're just furious because they've been made fools of, because that applies logic to their meanderings. And I'm not sure they deserve that. But it's the best answer we've had all day, isn't it?
Thanks.
You're welcome.
I think so, you know. And what do you expect a politician to do? When they make a speech, they're going to tell you what they want you to hear. They'll leave out the things that they don't want you to hear. That's... and does.
Yeah. No, and there it is. I mean, you've jogged my memory. I should have probably brought that up a little bit sooner, the fact that it was reported in the middle of November on the penultimate forecast that productivity was quite a bit better than expected. Some of the downgrade had been offset by strong wage growth prompted by inflation itself. So none of the facts support the idea that you're supposed to be furious. But hand on heart, how many corners of the UK media today have simply told you to be furious without really explaining why? She's a liar! Nigel Farage says so, so it must be true. And yet, the more we've dug into it today, and I think we've been fairly even-handed, and I'm still open to suggestions of what it is we're supposed to be angry about, not noticing something that Bloomberg was reporting on November the 14th, of which probably we're all guilty. I don't think I noticed it. But what are you supposed to be angry about today? And I'll leave you with this thought, just for the hour. I'm not going anywhere. I'm here till one. The unpopularity is a matter of record. But if they were doing everything so badly, why would the mouthpieces for wealth, why would the client journalists who inflicted Boris Johnson and Liz Truss austerity and Brexit on us all, if Labour are really doing a bad job of everything, why are the people whose only interest is protecting the income of their private sponsors, their employers, and themselves, why are they so worried? What are they so cross about? It's 11:01.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, Sakir Starmer has described the budget and the lifting of the two-child benefit cap as a moment of personal pride. He's been delivering a speech in London to defend Rachel Reeves' economic plan from intense criticism since it was delivered last Wednesday. The Chancellor's also been facing claims she misled voters over the state of the public finances. But the Prime Minister has insisted that's not the case.
I simply don't accept, and I was receiving the numbers, that being told that the OBR productivity review means you've got £16 billion less than you would otherwise have had, shows that you've got an easy starting point. Yes, of course all the other figures have to be taken into account, but we started the process with significantly less than we would otherwise have had.
Labour says it does not recognise a Bangladeshi court's ruling against Tulip Sadiq. The MP for Hampstead and Highgate has been sentenced to 2 years in prison over corruption charges that she denies. They are linked to Sheikh Hasina, Ms Sadiq's aunt and the former leader of Bangladesh. Three former Conservative MPs have defected to Reform UK. They are Jonathan Gullis, Leah Nitchie and Chris Green, all of whom lost their seats at last year's election. Authorities in Hong Kong say they have now made 13 arrests over last week's huge building fire. It claimed at least 151 lives and more than 40 people are still missing. And Brian Hayes, one of the best-known voices on LBC in the 1970s and 80s, has died at the age of 87.
I know there are lots of questions and lots of people waiting on the phone, so let's talk first to Elsie. Hello, Elsie.
Hello.
Yes, you're talking to Mrs. Thatcher now.
Hello. Mrs. Thatcher,
good morning,
how do you feel in being the leader of the Conservative Party?
He is widely credited with helping to pioneer the radio phone-in and shape the sound of LBC. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was down 6 at 97.40. In the pound buys $1.32 and a euro 14. LBC weather, wet and windy for most places. The rain heaviest in South Wales, where there's an amber weather warning, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Christmas was a tough time in my family. I became homeless as an adult. I had to turn to a food bank.
This Christmas, your gift to Trussell could help provide emergency food and expert advice. For people like Aaron, it'll be a lifeline.
This Christmas, my dream is that people leave the food bank with hope.
If you can, please give to Trussell today. You can help food banks provide an emergency food parcel and support someone facing hunger this winter. Search Trussell today.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Minutes after 11 is the time. I was going to pay tribute to Brian Hayes a little later in the programme, but it will feel a bit odd now that the news bulletin has quite rightly marked his passing. He was the best at this. I didn't really know his work on LBC. I wasn't really aware of LBC as a younger person because I was at school in Yorkshire and I grew up in Kidderminster. But I had one of my very first experiences in a radio studio with Brian Hayes. He was working at Five Live at the time and he was doing the 10 o'clock, the 10 p.m. show, and they'd wheel in jokers like me to pore over the stories of the day. And I hope it's okay if I do this for a minute. Is it? Do you mind? But he was so much a part of the LBC legend. Is so much a part of the LBC legend that we really should take a moment to pay homage properly. And I'll begin from a personal perspective because it was the first time I'd sort of seen anyone do that on the radio. We grew up listening to the Today programme in the car on the way to school when I was young enough to be driven to school by my dad. And that was it, really. And then I'd listen to the charts and pop music and Simon Bates and Radio 1. I didn't know. I'd not really listened to LBC or Five Live or any of them. And I sat in the studio, so going back about 25 years, maybe slightly more, and I just watched this man talk about the news in the way that we used to talk about it at home, over the dinner table, and invite comments and then take calls from people. And I never dared think, it didn't cross my mind I might be able to do that one day. But I just remember thinking, crikey, I grew up in a journalist's house and I didn't know about this kind of journalism. I didn't know about this kind of work. And then when I got here and I found out more about Brian, and I got to know him a bit as well, and he was very, very kind to me in the early days of my attempts to follow him in this extraordinary slot, by far the biggest talent ever to sit on LBC between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. Present company absolutely included, by far the biggest talent. And I got to know him a bit, and he had this respect for the caller that is extraordinary. I mean, he expected something in return. He expected callers to have something interesting to say, and he expected a degree of engagement and a degree of intelligence. I probably learned more from him than from anybody else. And at British radio, because he went on, as I've mentioned, to other places, including Radio 2 as well. British radio, this Australian-born genius, was so lucky to have him, so lucky to benefit from his broadcast. And I know a lot of people, because LBC has an extraordinary ability to inspire loyalty in listeners, quite unlike many other radio stations. I know an awful lot of people who will be feeling a very personal sense of loss today, whether they ever met Brian Hayes or not. In many ways, he invented what we do together every day. I don't know if you knew that. In many ways, he was the one that realized that you can treat a radio microphone like you treat your dinner table at home. And you might not agree with everybody sitting around the table with you, but if you can be respectful, or at least try, not always successfully, to be respectful, then you can create something very, very special. And it is because of Brian Hayes that so many of us today still try to create that thing that is very, very special. So God bless you, Brian, and thank you. 8 minutes after 11 is the time. Is it time for another little dip of the toe into the AI story? A research today published by the Office of Budget Responsibility, who are in the news quite a lot at the moment, aren't they? Artificial intelligence will replace more than 3 million jobs in the next decade. 3.38 million jobs could be substituted, including 2.1 million in financial and professional services, while a further 8.6 million could be complemented. This, by the way, is exclusive to Britain. This is us. A higher proportion of tasks that are easily automated by AI, such as data entry, appointment, So, listen, no forecast is infallible, as the OBR knows better than anybody. And equally, there is no way of checking or proving any of this. But I've got a feeling, and it's the first time it's popped into my head, at which point you send me a text saying, actually, James, you said this 6 months ago. But I've just got a feeling that are we all going a little bit don't look up on this? I'm not suggesting that AI is going to be an unqualified disaster, because it obviously isn't. It improves many areas of life, both professional and personal, in untold ways, unimaginable ways, and it's barely got started yet. But there is a Leonardo DiCaprio film, which is an allegory for climate change. And if you're not familiar with it, essentially there is an asteroid heading towards Earth that will destroy us all, a bit like the one that supposedly destroyed the dinosaurs. I say supposedly because I just haven't got the science. Probably not supposedly. But anyway, there's an asteroid heading towards Earth that will destroy humanity. Its impact will be such that humanity is destroyed. And it's spotted by quite an obscure astronomer who, obviously, like chicken licking, rushing towards the king, except in this case the sky really is falling in, he starts shouting his discoveries from various rooftops, and the reception he receives changes in the course of the film, to the point where everybody stops looking at the asteroid and carrying on as if life were normal. It's an allegory for climate change denial. You know, we are not watching an asteroid hurtle towards Earth at 100 miles an hour. We are watching a metaphorical asteroid hurtle towards Earth much more slowly. It's probably getting faster, but the allegory is almost perfect, because the effort that is put into persuading us not to worry about it, including by many political figures who today are telling you to be furious with Rachel Reeves but can't really tell you why, the idea that we're not looking up at AI, we're just sort of getting on with it, when we really should be more conscious of the scale, the breadth and the depth of the changes that it's going to bring. And then, because I'm just human too, I look at this headline today, AI to replace 3.4 million jobs in the next decade. And those are the ones that are going to be replaced entirely. The jobs that are safest, as we have actually worked out on the programme before, are jobs such as cleaners, caretakers and construction workers. And this seems to me to be a moment of epic importance that isn't landing. I mean, for my sins and to my shame, I'm a little bit guilty of something similar with climate change. I haven't found whatever the gear it is that people discover within themselves to become properly active in that field. I mean, my opinions are based on science, and I think deep down I've got so much faith in humanity. It's a curse, not a blessing. I've got so much faith in humanity that I think we'll come up with a solution. I think we'll come up with an answer. But I do look up and I do see what's coming, and I console myself with slightly naive or idealistic thoughts about how we might address it. So I'm not guilty of staring at my shoes. And with AI, we are divided, aren't we, into a million different tribes defined by levels of understanding. I'm reading a rather good book, actually. It's one of those James Bond reboots, except this one is about Q. And it is an AI supercomputer that lies at the very heart of the plot. And, you know, the idea that it is, as it evolves, it is going to change anything and everything is irresistible. But I don't know how your brain is wired. My brain isn't wired well enough to take proper stock of something that big. My brain isn't wired like that. So I think very rare is the brain that is. You know, it's people who, you know, people like Tim Berners-Lee or Albert Einstein, their brains are wired in a way that can accommodate thoughts the rest of us can't even properly frame or conceive of. And so you tell me that climate change is going to kill us all, and I kind of know you're probably right, but what am I... I'm not going to go and start throwing chalk at the snooker. Well done, Michael Holt, yesterday, by the way. I don't know if you're listening, but giving the fella a 5-0 head start before finally getting your act together was probably a little bit ambitious, but well played nonetheless. I don't know where AI slots into what I'm just describing, but today, for the first time, I think we're playing Don't Look Up. I just think that AI is gathering pace behind us, above us, below us, to the left of us, to the right of us. AI is gathering pace. AI, right, is coming for our jobs. And we're not ready. And if this research is even, like, close to correct, probably the most frightening figure in it is not 3.4 million jobs. The most frightening figure in it is in the next decade. In the next decade. So, here's what I'd like you to do, okay? And it's a bit of a different ask from previous conversations about this technology. And, again, I don't want to sound dismissive. So just shouting universal basic income at me is not an answer to the question that I'm about to ask, all right? I'm now channeling the memory of Brian Hayes by expecting very high standards from my callers. I want you to tell me how the world is going to change, feasibly. 03456060973, okay? That's the biggie. How is the world going to change? I also want you to tell me whether we are engaging in a game of Don't Look Up, or whether you think I've got that wrong. We are living in a time of epic change that we are currently almost entirely ignoring. 03456060973. And then the third and most obvious and the easiest question is, has it come for your job yet? How much of your job is it currently doing? Because I think I'll get a bunch of messages. I may get a few calls telling me that I'm believing the hype. And I don't think I am believing the hype. I'd love to believe that perhaps the threat to the status quo wasn't as real as it appears to be according to this research. But that seems to me to be the ultimate example of not looking up. Oh, it's all a load of hype. It's all a load of nonsense. Do you see what I mean? And what if you're right and everybody else is wrong? Then, you know, 10 years from now, we look back and laugh at how we all thought that AI was going to come for 3.4 million jobs by today. But what if you're wrong? You're actually encouraging people not to look up. You're actually part of the process of saying there's a massive threat on the horizon to the way that we do things and have always done things. And we are completely ill-prepared for it because people like you told us it was all a load of hype. So be very careful before you reach for that lever. I'm not reaching for that lever unless you come on with the most powerful and persuasive argument I've ever heard. The lever I'm reaching for is what's going to change? What's behind this headline? What happens if 3.4 million jobs are replaced? Do we have to find 3.4 million new jobs that currently don't exist, doing things we haven't even thought of yet for these people? Or do we have to introduce a politics that does recognize some form of universal basic income? It divvies up all the money in a society and gives some of it to all of us before we've even got out of bed in the morning. Imagine how the people telling you to get cross with Rachel Reeves today would greet that kind of economics. What is going to change behind the headline about the way we live? Not just the way we work, but the way we live together. 03456060973. I might ask for your qualifications. It's not mystery hour, but I'm interested in why you know what you know. And if you seem to know a lot more than I do, I'm particularly interested in what perspective you have on this that has informed your view so completely. So you've got three questions. One is what you'd call A level. One is GCSE and one is 11 plus. Is that all right? Or does that sound condescending? So the A level question is, no, one is undergraduate. One is PhD, one is undergraduate, and one is A-level. There you go. No one gets offended now, right? A-levels are worth a bit of effort. So the PhD question is, how is the world going to change? 03456060973. The A-level question is, are we doing a don't look up? Are we actually kidding ourselves about the scale of the change that is coming? And that's the undergraduate question. And the A-level question is, what's happened already that you think the rest of us might be surprised by? Okay? So, PhD, how is the world going to change? What's the story behind the 3.4 million jobs in the next decade headline? Undergraduate, are we doing a don't look up here? We're literally kidding ourselves about the scale of the change that's on the horizon. A-level, what's already happened in your world that informs your view on the previous two questions? Go on, give us a ring. I like these phone-ins. I really do. I find them absolutely fascinating, not least because I always learn something. And yes, that is a challenge.
This is LBC.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
They live in you.
A spectacle far beyond your imagination.
They live in me.
Be amazed. Be moved.
They're watching over.
Be there.
Everything we see.
For an experience that will stay with you forever.
In every creature.
Disney's The Lion King.
In every star.
At London's Lyceum Theatre.
They live in you.
Book now at thelionking.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It's 20 minutes after 11. Another story for you, which I don't know if we file it under misinformation. I'll get the AI phone in, up and running in a minute. About that story from last week about emigration. You remember the idea that we have seen net migration plunge to unprecedented lows, but they're still telling you to be angry about that because it's proof that, I don't know, lots of rich people are moving to Dubai or something. It's so hard to keep up with what it is you're supposed to be angry about. Some fascinating research published today showing that a large part of this exodus is UK citizens moving in tens of thousands to Eastern Europe because that's where they came from or that's where their partners came from. So British citizens, people who either achieved citizenship as a consequence of moving here under freedom of movement or from elsewhere, not just Eastern Europe. Bangladesh is fairly well represented in this. But British citizens doing what people like Farage have told them to do, and they've gone back where they came from. And they're still moaning about it. It's extraordinary, isn't it? If you're in the business of moaning and telling everybody to be angry, everything works for you in the end. What do we want? Lower net migration. What have we got? Lower net migration, but we're still furious because it's proof that Rachel Reeves is rubbish and a liar. But you said you wanted lower net migration. Yeah, but not like this. Not where people are leaving. Well, who's leaving? Oh, lots of Eastern Europeans and Bangladeshis, apparently, according to United Nations data of who actually is moving from the UK over the course of the last 4 years. Central and Eastern European countries reported an increase of more than 100,000 British citizens among their populations. So that will be both people who became citizens while living here and people that they met while they were here who've gone back to their partner's country of origin. Why? I'll give you a clue. It begins with B. You moved here 10 years ago or 20 years ago. It was because of the opportunities that you were offered. And then we voted to become the first population in the history of humanity to impose economic sanctions on ourselves, and everything got worse. So people have moved back to countries with better prospects than ours because they're still in the European Union. And the angermongers? Yeah, they'll be cross about that as well. But just don't ask them to explain exactly why. 23 minutes after 11 is the time. Mark is in Brentford to kick off the AI conversation. Mark, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James. A great programme, by the way.
It's all right. Can you take your muffler off? You're like that dreadful reform woman who thinks everyone in London is wearing a balaclava helmet.
I'm going to speak directly into the phone. How's that?
That's much better. Thank you.
Okay, no problem. I am involved. I have internet businesses which I use AI with now. There are a couple of points that you made that I would like to pull you up on.
Of course.
The first one, James, is you're saying that AI cannot replace builders.
Just to split the hair that you're splitting. Yeah. I'll split the split hair. This is what the research from the OBR is saying. So I don't really want to dig into whether or not. I'm sure there's bits that they can do that are currently done by humans.
They're already bricklaying.
I'm sure. But yeah, That's not the point of this phone. I'm in a strict mood today, aren't I?
Telling everyone they're
ringing the wrong phone in. But I want to look at the don't look up question, or how the world is going to change question.
Well, I think the 3 million is an underestimate, and I think it will happen a lot quicker.
Oh, okay.
I think it will happen a lot quicker. The changes we've seen over the last couple of years, I mean, AI handles everything for me. I'm a trader, so I used to need analysts to help me, check out graphs and stuff. AI does it for me in 1 minute. So that's just one example. I can build a website in 1 minute. That's web building companies, website building companies gone. I can clean my house with a robot. Robots
can't go upstairs. Daleks. I've got one of those as well. You're not special. You're not Marty McFly bombing around Brentford on your hoverboard, mate. I've got a Roomba. Is it called a Roomba? I think, or a Roombot or something like that.
Some hoverboard, I think, or something like that. But yeah, I mean, I think that I think it's very dangerous. I think that it's going to cost a lot more than 3 million jobs, quite frankly. I can see already looking at some of the markets and some of the businesses.
How long before it does what you do? So it's got rid of the analyst now. And when I was leaving college, the analysts were the really clever guys, weren't they? The ones that could crunch numbers like you couldn't believe, and sometimes the speed with which they could do it was crucial.
These are a hell of a lot. These are much more clever than I am.
Yeah, but how long before it does what you do? And you just put your money in the slot, and it makes the trades based upon the analysis, and you're cut out.
Oh, no, it's already there.
So you're just harvesting the cash at the end of the day, or covering the losses.
Yeah, but we already have robotic trading. The robots that can trade for you, you can put in the style, but that's been out for a while. But my point is it's gonna take over. There isn't anything, I mean, there is literally nothing that I don't think AI cannot do, in 3 years or 4 years. We're very close. AI robots are training AI robots as we speak.
So let me move you from the PhD to the undergraduate question.
Yes.
And that is about, how dangerous is it that people aren't aware of this?
I think it's very dangerous because we may need to change our focus, especially people coming out of school and college. They may need to look a little bit more about their career paths and stuff like that, because the jobs or the whatever careers they're looking to get into, they could be, if someone's coming out of a design college, that could be
obsolete.
A really thing.
What about architects?
Yeah.
Architects?
Yeah, or not. I mean, honestly, an architect, here's the space, this is the size, build a house, give me the plans, and it's done in 5 minutes. So,
and I suppose, to begin with, humans are going to have to go over everything.
We already have.
I wouldn't trust health and safety at the moment. I know that it's probably more reliable, but there are lots of stories of AI coming up with citations that don't exist. But that's just, those are teething troubles, right?
We have a long way to go.
Yes.
But it's happening so
fast. But it's going to happen inevitably.
It is, definitely, and by 2030, I think you're 3 million jobs. I mean, it's...
Do you have children?
I don't.
Okay,
I don't.
Well, there's something that AI is never going to be able to do.
That's very true.
That wasn't the question. I was just going to ask you what you would advise them to
children,
do. What would you advise them to do if you did? Was the question I was going to ask, career-wise. Yeah, see?
Just understand how it works and try and find an angle. It's very difficult. It's very scary. I haven't got a very positive... I mean, yes, I can sit and make money a lot easier, and I'm not making a load of money, but I'm making a living. but I can do things a lot quicker and than I used to be able to. But I'm not very positive. I'm quite scared about...
About the future, and that's why people aren't...
Not about AI itself, but the fact that you can connect AI to robots, and robots can then do anything. It's already happening in, you know, all the big kind of sorting centers. It's already there. We'll see it more and more. So, you know, people, taxis that are driving themselves and things like that, that's all AI. So I'm a bit scared, I'll be honest. I think that...
I can see why. And that is another reason why people don't look up, because they don't want to be scared. And I mean, how many areas of life have we discussed on the program over the years where you realize that people don't like the facts? They've had enough of experts. I'd rather cling on to my comforting nonsense than actually confront the slightly discomforting reality of what we're dealing with. And, you know, who do we rely on to guide us through these difficult periods or these difficult territories? Whew. Thank you, Mark. And there it is. A nice little segue from the PhD into the undergraduate. And we're not looking up. I wonder why. And actually, let's throw in a GCSE question as well at this point in proceedings. So question number four is, what would you advise... Well, no, because I don't want you to know, because I'm going to tell my children to do it, so I'm not doing it on the radio. What would you advise an A-level student or an undergraduate at the moment or a school leaver to do career-wise? What should they set their sights on that might be AI-proof? Of course I'm going to ask that question. I don't know, because, you know, I read the stuff that the OBR say is going to be safe, cleaners, builders, and you sort of immediately think, how long are cleaners going to be necessary if you've got robots? How long are builders going to be necessary if you've got robots? That's not AI necessarily, but what jobs will be safe? Thomas Watts, how's your headlines?
Sir Keir Starmer has insisted there was no misleading from Rachel Reeves in the run-up to the budget. The Chancellor's been accused of exaggerating the black hole in the public finances to justify tax rises. Tulip Sadiq has rejected the verdict of a court in Bangladesh after she was sentenced to 2 years in jail. The Labour MP says a corruption trial held in her absence was flawed and farcical. Authorities in Hong Kong say they've now made 13 arrests over last week's fire at a high-rise apartment complex. It claimed at least 151 lives, more than 40 people are still missing. LBC weather, wet and windy for most areas today. The rain heaviest in South Wales, where there's an amber alert in place, a high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Laithwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide, searching high, and we mean really high, and low, and we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf? We don't go there. Off the beaten track? We certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at laithwaites.co.uk. Laithwaites. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, top up on island fuel. R, rest every 2 hours too. I, inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with
TRIP. Think, do the four trip checks before every long journey. National Highways.
Black Friday is non-stop. Orders, calls, messages.
Sounds like you need the right sidekick to keep business booming, Claire.
Go on.
In EE's Black Friday sale, you can save £720 on a 36-month plan with the Samsung Galaxy S25 Ultra. Perfect for keeping your business running smoothly.
What a deal? Thanks, Kev.
Search EE Business today. BT and EE. Better for business.
Excludes 20% VAT. Ends 4th of December. Terms apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
33 minutes after 11 and 3.4 million jobs in jeopardy by the end of the decade. Not by the end of the decade, within a decade. This is the latest research from the rather heavily covered OBR at the moment. I found a nice quote. You may have thought I was exaggerating a minute ago when I was talking about how the OBR can't be trusted at all until suddenly it can. Someone sent me a guy, here's a blast from the past, Jacob Rees-Mogg. Do you remember him? One of the worst of the last lot of Tories who hasn't yet emigrated to reform. Can you imagine a world in which you'd boast about having signed up Jonathan Gullis? If I were running reform, which I grant you is highly unlikely, and the message reached me that Jonathan Gullis has decided to join our ranks, I'd have put out whatever the opposite is of an APB, of an all-points bulletin, I'd have put out a ban. Don't tell anyone that Jonathan Gullis has joined us. Who on earth is going to go, looking at the current landscape of British politics? I quite like the look of these lot, you know, the racists who take bribes from the Kremlin. I like the look of them. But I'm not quite ready to join them yet. Jonathan Gullis has signed up with them, has it? Oh, okay, yeah, then I am definitely going to throw my lot in with the racists who take bribes from Kremlin stooges. They're my people. They're my people. They're good old Gullis. Imagine that. Imagine thinking, oh, Jonathan Gullis. Seriously. I'm not here to give advice to Nigel Farage or indeed 30p Lee or any of them. But I'd have kept that one under your hats, lads. Jonathan Gullis has joined us. We must be doing something right. Said nobody ever. In fact, I mean, the people who'd really want the news out there would be the Tories. We are no longer a party in which Jonathan Gullis or Nadine Dorries feel at home. So Kemi Badenoch can't be doing as bad a job as she appears to be doing to the rest of us because Jonathan Gullis and Nadine Dorries have now left the party, as well as some people that you've never heard of. But you've only heard of them because even by the standards of the Tory party under Boris Johnson, they were unbelievably awful. Plenty of middlingly awful people who lost their seats at the last election or who resigned and then didn't resign and then resigned and didn't resign and didn't resign and then resigned and then got hired by the Daily Mail. But you never heard of them because they weren't quite awful enough to merit attention. Jonathan Gullis is joining us. Let's put out a press release. Wow. 25 to 12 is the time. I don't know. Could you replace Jonathan Gullis with AI? I doubt it. What's the opposite of AI? Artificial thickness, I suppose. Maybe he could be replaced by AT. Get that to fill whatever hole it is that Jonathan Gullis has left, wherever it is he's left, to join reform. Paul's in Liverpool. Paul, sorry, I got distracted. What would you like to say? We may never find out. Aidan is in Bromley. Aidan, what made you pick up the phone?
I'm not in Bromley, I'm in Bristol.
But I can't talk to you. I've used up my Bristol quotient for the week. And it's only Monday. Can you pretend you're in Bristol?
Sorry?
Can you pretend you're in Bromley?
Yeah, I'll be back next week.
Okay, well, there we go then. Aidan is back in Bromley next week. Aidan, what made you pick up the phone?
Have you heard of a book called If Anyone Builds It, Everyone Dies?
No.
Right, you should read it. It's terrifying.
Oh, I've got enough going on to be terrified by.
Well, there is two things. One, yeah. My work. Since you're asking about work, so music industry AI is already infesting it. Music, the amount of music uploaded, I think to Deezer have put a ban on it, but the amount of music being uploaded that's AI created.
Is any of it any good? Because, I mean, you can say no, but it will be soon.
Some of it's getting indistinguishable. Yeah. So the music jobs are gone. People writing, you know, that's AI can do that. But human interest is always going to be there. You know, people always want human. Real music's made by humans.
Well, I mean, this is philosophy now.
It is.
Because if I absorbed a million songs written by humans and then got asked to create one, I'm thinking about AI could do it. I mean, do you see what I mean?
It can
listen to all the songs.
It can't.
Yeah, but how much is unique?
You can get the average, of course it can.
We'll never be able to push a boundary or create a new genre or anything like that. Well, I don't know.
Yeah. It's going to get really good. That is going to be terrifying. It's already really, really good. You know, and the people, I think it'll get to the point where people will just have their own unique playlist created for them daily by AI that's, you know, specialised to their mood for the morning or whatever.
With acts that don't currently exist and will never actually exist, because Spotify does that already with real acts. And how does the world change then, do you think? Because, I mean, what happens when all of the jobs that are currently done by humans are no longer done by humans?
Well, back to the book, this isn't even the thing to worry about. It's artificial superintelligence that is being built at the moment that we have to worry about, not AI, ASI.
What does that do? What does that mean when it's at home?
Well, what it's potentially capable of, well, far more than my understanding of but getting into quantum computing and the fact that it can, it's unknown potential, and it's the fact that what it's feeding off, the information that it feeds off, and therefore what its motives and intentions will be and what it's capable of.
Yeah, that, unfortunately, you're reading a proper academic book. I'm reading Quantum of Menace, which is a kind of James Bond update by Vaseem Khan. And at the heart, it's brilliant. I'm loving it. And at the heart
back to interrupt, but Bond, the part of that is the tailored viruses that AI can create. And that's a Bond plot already.
So the role of government as this juggernaut gathers pace will actually be to ring fence humanity and to say, you could.
We need anti-AI marches. We need to stop. You know, it's going to get into the streets. It's going to be horrific.
Yeah, you could. You could. This could be done by AI, but we're going to outlaw that because otherwise society will suffer.
Yeah, it's a Wall-E or Wall-E. Yeah, Ultron and Wall-E. I think that's the two.
Okay. Outcomes. Well, I don't know if I'm going to read. But hey, look, if I don't read that book, then you move from PhD to A level, don't you? Or PhD to undergraduate, because then we're not looking up. Don't read the book, because that involves looking. I don't want to know how far. You said it's really frightening, and my initial reaction, I've only just noticed this. My gut reaction was, I'm not reading that. Sounds terrifying. But it's knowledge, and knowledge is power, and forewarned is forearmed. But our human impulse just happened to me then, right then. I just thought, I'm not reading that. Sounds scary. I mean, you said it was scary. I should probably read it and report back. 22:12 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If anyone builds it, everyone dies. So it's a bit of a trope, that, isn't it? I mean, you think of Oppenheim. But there are points, I'm not going to be able to think of any now, where it was not in humanity's best interest to create. I mean, lots of points in history. This is something else that's popped up in this book that I'm reading. I had no idea reading a relatively good thriller would have been informing so much of my thought today. But it's a book about a quantum computer. I'm only halfway through it, so I don't even know how. I've got no theories on how it's going to end. And it's a murder mystery, effectively. So this is only the side plot. But things that humanity maybe shouldn't ever have let out of the box. You see what I mean? Like a Pandora's box. You think most obviously of the atomic bomb, the nuclear bomb. But everything could go on that list. You could almost put the printing press there. From the ruling class's point of view, the printing press was a blooming disaster. Translating the Bible was a disaster because the people could read it for themselves and realise that a lot of what the priests had been telling them for 1,000 years was all a load of old hokum about what was in the Bible. All sorts of things you wouldn't necessarily do. Have we ever successfully kept technology? Well, we wouldn't know. But has humanity ever successfully kept technology under wraps or at bay for the benefit of society? Because this particular technology, if it fell into the wrong hands, that's what you have to say, isn't it, in films? If it fell into the wrong hands, Bond. If it fell into the wrong hands, Keith. If it fell into the wrong hands, we'd all be toast. I think AI is probably too late now, isn't it, for that kind of process? But there will be things that governments can say that is illegal. You can't get AI to do that because you need a human being to do it. I can't quite see that working either, not with the direction of political traffic that we've seen in recent years. Telling rich people that they have to worry about people who aren't as rich as them. Oh, yeah, how's that working out for you? 11:42 is the time. Where am I going next? Paul in Liverpool. Paul in Liverpool, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Yeah, I work in TV and film and visual effects, and it's, I know, because I'm already using it, like AI is making a huge impact. And for the future, for like youngsters who are, you know, trying to leave university and then get a job, there's going to be no jobs available in the kind of stuff we do. And on set, you know, I'm speaking to people, all the crew, and I show them the stuff that I'm doing because I work on both sides of it, all sides of it, actually. But like in creating the content that I'm now using AI to create, and I don't need, you know, 10 people to do it. There's more control. It's faster. It's cheaper. But when you speak to people who are, you know, you're involved within a production, they are very, very, they look at it and they literally, you know, jaw drops.
Yeah.
And they realise what's coming down the line.
Is how much, I mean, it's a sector in which an awful lot of people are struggling to find work at the moment, including people who have had no real problems finding work for 20 or 30 years. How much of that is down to AI?
Well, I know big productions have been, or like big film studios that have been planned, have been put on hold because, or not just put on hold, stopped dead, because they know that if they sink in, like, you know, $400 million into a studio complex, nobody's probably going to be using it in 10 years.
And so we're all on hold then. We're all eating wait and see pie.
Yeah, I mean, if I, you know, obviously I speak to actors and I show them some of the stuff, and there's things that you can do with AI. You can take a performance of an actor and you can, you know, kind of transfer that to another totally different character.
That's mad, isn't it? And you can have dead people, of course, making new films. I mean, that I've read about that already. And every time you think, oh, it won't quite be right, we're back to that music caller, aren't we? And the idea, well, it will be eventually. Soon you won't be able to see the seams. I mean, some of the fake stuff online is already impossible to distinguish from the real stuff.
Yeah. And as people say, always say, this is the worst it's ever going to be, right? This is the lowest quality it's ever going to be.
Yes, exactly.
Because next week it's going to be better. And literally, I am not exaggerating, every week something, an upgrade of a model or another model entirely comes out, and you are jumping like leaps and bounds ahead at such a rate. It's just like phenomenal. I'm working on a few projects right now, but one of them is like a pitch for something which is going to be shown to Netflix, and the clients commissioned me to tell a story set in 1820. Obviously all that period stuff, like, I have been able to build, you know, design the characters based on oil paintings of these real characters, which this lady's got the rights to, by the way. So it's not like I'm just like stealing someone's image.
don't worry.
and but you know, that's the other thing. People do get all wound up about that. But what I've been able to produce in, you know, like 100 hours would be lately just be impossible. It would never be.
You need an army of people to be doing the research in books and stuff, or even online. They'd be googling and things. Yeah. But AI does all of that. It does the searching. It finds the stuff that you need.
AI tools to do, like, use ChatGPT, Gemini, and then the actual model generation tools for the stills, for the motion, for the audio, like the whole thing. It's a pipeline.
But it also, you can make it sound exciting. You can, I mean, a lot of what you've described is a good thing, you know. From a creative point of view as well, it's a good thing, because it does the boring bit for you and leaves you free to do the magic.
Yeah, my point was this, it is a democratizing tool. Like, if you are a creative person, which I am, and like a lot of other people are, if you've got a story to tell and you've got the ability to learn how to use these tools, you can bring your story to life. You don't need a film crew and a budget, a huge budget. If what you want to do is actually tell stories, it's an amazing tool. And it might not be one man who's like, you know, if Stanley Kubrick had this tool, do you know what I mean? It's not like one kind of auteur, but if you've got even, you know, four or five people, like, what's a story last week, right?
Go on.
This year's Coca-Cola commercial is all AI again, the Christmas one. Last year it got slated. This year it looks faultless. Five guys made that in a month, and it took 70,000 kind of generations of video. So even if you say $3 a generation, even with those guys' wages, right, that's $250,000 adverts. There's no way on this planet that prior to 2 years ago, that Coca-Cola commercial wouldn't have been, you know, $5 million or whatever.
What about, because, I mean, this, I needed this call, actually, because you remind us of the other side of the coin. But I have to ask, what about all of the people that would have been working on those productions and now aren't going to be?
That's the problem,
to find something else to do. Have you got kids? Have you got children?
Yeah, I have.
What would you advise them to do?
Well,
career-wise,
one of them works for Goldman Sachs.
All right.
And my daughter is in equestrian sort of world, and she's doing stuff with high-level stuff. So both of them have found something that they love, like my son is like... And it kind of leads to another thing, like Eddie, our son, he was homeschooled. So here's the thing, he's got the Goldman Sachs through that, kind of just having the initiative and the drive. But both of them are doing the things that they want to do. Obviously, there's... you think about what work gives you, it gives you sort of fulfillment. And you've,
of course,
if you're lucky, it does.
I mean, and that's the thing about this, is that it's not got any of the sort of traditional tropes of technology, and that it will only come after people at the bottom of the food chain. It will only replace manual labour or anything like that. When you see production lines being mechanised, it was people on the production lines that were most vulnerable. But you're describing pretty much everybody, except the genesis, except the progenitor of the creative process, which, you know, a lot of people listening will think, well, eventually they'll come for you as well. But the question that society has to wrestle with and doesn't seem ready to wrestle with yet is, what else changes? Okay, so you're replacing this and replacing that, and Paul's made a lot of it sound really good and really desirable. I bet it's a lot easier to write the kind of book that I wrote a couple of years ago now than it would have been then, because I had to plow through all of the research myself. Now I could say, I need a little bit of this, I need proof that, ... And up it would pop. But, I don't... Oh, man alive. Speaking of finding things from the past that fit your purposes, who do you think... Actually, I'll do it after this.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
Why is there delay?
Straight to the point.
This government is unravelling everywhere you look.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
How can that make sense to anyone?
Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. T. Drop up on island fuel. Rest every 2 hours too. I inspect tire pressure and tread. Prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with TRIP.
Think. Do the 4 trip checks before every long journey. National Highways.
At Laithwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide. Searching high, and we mean really high. And low, and we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf, we don't go there. Off the beaten track, we certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at laithwaites.co.uk. Laithwaites. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
Train to Brighton with the besties. Immaculate vibes, as always. But I bet my ice skating is going to be pure chaos.
Oh, Em, you better hold my hand.
No, styled it out. I've got this.
Last one to the other side buys the hot chocolate.
Back on the train. Only fell twice.
Low-key legend.
We have to do this every year. Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel and off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
Great to see you back at Specsavers. Okay, could you read out the letters on the wall for me?
Yep. D-E-A-L-S? Yeah, D-E-A-L-S. Deals.
Oh, right. Our Black Friday deals are eye-catching, but the letter chart's over here.
Oh, sorry.
At Specsavers, we've got all sorts of unmissable Black Friday deals, like up to £50 off one pair of designer glasses. Offer ends on 7th of December 2025. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
11:52 is the time. So, for those of you not up to speed with some of the stuff that we've been talking about, and I'm by far the I'm far from the most reliable guide you could have in these places. But in terms of research, some of the stuff that Paul was just talking about, at the moment, if I wanted to find out, for example, if anything embarrassing had ever occurred between Richard Tice, who I think is the deputy leader of Reform, and Jonathan Gullis, who is their newest signing, all I could really do would be to Google Gullis Tice, right? Or Jonathan Gullis, Richard Tice, and maybe embarrassing or something like that, and you'd be relying on Google to come up with something embarrassing. If you put it through AI or ChatGPT, you could simply say, find me evidence of Tice and Gullis not liking each other, or Tice and, and you don't have to sift through all the other stories in which they both appear. And you'd come up with this from Richard Tice to Jonathan Gullis. And this is from March of last year. With a special Easter message to Tory MP Jonathan Gullis, given the multiple bits of embarrassing personal information we have on you, I suggest you pipe down on your attacks against me. So Richard Tice either lied or has decided that the party should sign up somebody about whom they know deeply damaging and unpleasant things. Which do you think it is? Do you think Richard Tice is a liar, or do you think Reform is signing up busted flush Tories about whom, on whom they have embarrassing dossiers of personal information? I honestly have no clue. I wouldn't even know where to start on that analysis, but it's quite interesting. Here's Richard Tice on Jonathan Gullis. Given the multiple bits of embarrassing personal information we have on you, I suggest you pipe down on your attacks against me. So was Richard Tice lying about having embarrassing personal information on Jonathan Gullis? Or is Richard Tice cool with having Jonathan Gullis in his party as long as none of the embarrassing personal information that he personally possesses gets out? So what would that be, hypocrite or liar? Who here would like to go first? Richard Tice, hypocrite or liar? Talk about a rock and a hard place. Back to AI. Maybe they could decide. Vicky's in Richmond. Vicky, what would you like to say?
Hello there.
Hello, Vicky.
Nice to speak to you. Firstly, I think you're panicking way too much, James.
I'm not panicking. Who are you saying? Who are you saying? I'm not panicking. I'm super cool.
We're all going to be gardening for Elon Musk, so don't panic. Yes. Don't worry. It's all fine.
Exactly.
On a more serious note now, I think you're spot on with your observation. I've worked in the creative industries for about 20 years and currently out of work for the last couple of years, apart from the odd freelance project. But so my days consist of searching on LinkedIn for work, and seriously, on there, the amount of roles, you know, it's hemorrhaging the amount of numbers of people looking for work with those fields.
Can I ask what field you're in? You don't have to tell me.
Yeah, no, so I've worked predominantly in fashion retail. So, you know, a lot of the, I guess, the, you know, the background work around that is in terms of, like, graphic design, visual communications, fashion shoots.
Wow, so you're the, actually, I think an earlier caller almost called you out by name, didn't they, when they said these are the areas that are going to be
exactly. They're all gone. And to sort of give you an example, so say for a fashion shoot, for example, you've got that whole crew, you've got the model, you've got the photographer, the retoucher, the production, the stylist, the hair and makeup artist.
Yeah.
You're talking like 10, 20 strong teams who, this is not something that's happening in the future. This is starting to happen already.
So can I put out a campaign for a perfume using AI already? If I was prepared to use a model that didn't exist?
Yeah, of course. And wow. So say, for example, Mango, if I'm allowed to mention a brand name.
I think so. I don't know what you're going to say next. I hate it when people do this. No, you should have run it through AI first.
It's nothing negative.
Okay.
But to give you an example, so a lot of fashion brands are using AI models for their e-commerce shops, so their websites, where we would all shop the product.
Wow.
But for fashion campaigns, it's still generally models that are used, real humans.
Okay.
But Mango are now using AI models in their fashion campaign. So that's now taking...
And to any visible detriment to them? I mean, would anybody even know unless it was pointed out to them?
No, I don't think so. I think the difference, you know, I think if you work in the design field and you're probably a bit of a purist and you know your craft and you know the difference between a human image and a synthetic image is because it doesn't have that soul. But as a consumer, when you're shopping online and you're flicking through product to buy, yeah, you're not...
I'm looking at it now. Vicky,
yeah, you won't be bothered,
I've got no clue that that's not real. I'd never know, would I? And of course, the clothes are going to look, I mean, better, for want of a better word, because the person's not real.
I think as a consumer, you're probably not even that bothered about it.
Is there any reason, I mean, aside from the impact upon livelihoods of people like you, is there any reason why I should be bothered as someone who's thinking of buying a bikini?
No,
that's the picture I'm looking at.
It's just a greater conversation, isn't it, about job losses. And it's, you know, I think another layer which I mentioned when I called in was around, you know, AI and ageism. You know, ageism is a real issue in terms of employment right now. You throw AI into that mix as well, and you're excluding quite a large proportion of society.
And that pushes us back to the PhD question about the stuff that we're just not ready for or prepared for.
Exactly. And I think what's also a concern, you know, I've written to my local MP, Pat McFadden and Keir Starmer, on the whole impact of ageism, and AI does, you know, contribute to this.
Of course.
Where you have, within society, you have the same 50-plus-year-olds, 50-60-year-old parents who could be losing their jobs, and their children who are graduating unable to get work.
We've just got this middle.
We're stuck.
Yeah, and that's terrifying. I mean, genuinely terrifying, not in an inflammatory way or a provocative way, but I've heard that already. There's no entry-level jobs. And, of course, the people doing the jobs above entry-level will be getting older and possibly becoming redundant, but all you're left with are the people in the middle that nobody is being trained to replace, or no one is being prepared to replace. And the generation above them, they are not staying around either. I'm not getting my words in necessarily entirely the right order, but I think I'm painting a picture that you can perceive or you can see. And all of this is happening. All of this is on the, not just on the horizon anymore. It's happening. It's literally Vicky's life. Oh boy. The time now is 12 noon. Up next, Peppa Pig.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, Sir Keir Starmer has insisted Rachel Reeves did not mislead the public in the run-up to last week's budget.
It was inevitable that we would always have to raise revenue. So there's no misleading there. During the overall process, the numbers improved. There was a point at which we thought, myself included, that we might have to reach for a manifesto breach of some significance.
The Prime Minister has been speaking in London to defend last week's plan for the economy from intense criticism. He's also outlined plans to reform the welfare system and improve the UK's ailing productivity. The Labour MP, Tulip Sadiq, has rejected the verdict of a court in Bangladesh after she was sentenced to 2 years in jail. The former minister says a corruption trial held in her absence was flawed and farcical. The charges against her are linked to Sheikh Hasina, Ms. Sadiq's aunt and the former Bangladeshi Prime Minister. A man accused of a mass stabbing on a train in Cambridgeshire will go on trial next year. Anthony Williams didn't attend the hearing over last month's attack at Cambridge Crown Court this morning. LBC's reporter Shivani Sharma is there.
Today was meant to be the plea hearing for 32-year-old Anthony Williams, but he refused to join the court by video link from prison. All of the 21 charges against him are going to be joined, and a trial date has been set for June next year. A month ago, 11 people were hospitalised after a mass stabbing on a train from Doncaster to London.
More than 22,000 homes remain without water for a third day after an issue at a water treatment site in Kent. South East Waters apologised to customers in and around Tunbridge Wells. It says supplies will gradually return during the day. And Virgin Media has been fined by Ofcom for putting vulnerable customers at risk of direct harm. The regulator has found personal alarm systems, often used by older people, were disconnected during a move to digital landlines. The firm will have to pay a penalty of £23.8 million.
In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was down 10 at 97.10. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.14. LBC weather, wet and windy for most areas. The rain heaviest in the west with an amber alert in place in South Wales. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling and the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 12, and I mean, the problem with being thoughtful and informed, and it's not something I know a lot about, I'm talking about other people now, is that you don't necessarily always agree with each other. So the people who are thoughtless and uninformed are the ones screaming about Rachel Reeves having lied, but are signally and uniformly unable to tell you why or how or what you're supposed to be angry about. But one commentator I follow pointed out earlier today that she was excessively gloomy in the run-up to her budget about the fiscal situation. Stephen Bush in the Financial Times, one of the commentators I really do admire the most and turn to frequently, has actually turned that idea on its head now by pointing out that an awful lot of the forecast is based on incredibly optimistic claims about what the government is going to do in the final year. So he's now arguing that she was nowhere near gloomy enough, that she's been far too Pollyanna-ish and upbeat and optimistic about the state of the economy moving forward. That's what I mean about being informed and intelligent. If you're informed and intelligent, things are really complicated, usually. And the more complicated things are, the less likely they are to admit really simple answers. If you don't care about being informed and intelligent, then here's someone shouting liar at Rachel Reeves. And that there is the UK media in a nutshell. Because even the people who are informed and intelligent will have disagreements with each other based upon their information and their intelligence. You can argue that she was too gloomy because the rationale that she imposed prior to income tax rate increases, as Keir Starmer just explained in that news bulletin, we'll catch up with Aggie shortly about that speech the Prime Minister has been giving. You could argue she was too gloomy because, as it turned out, we didn't need to, this is them talking, we didn't need to raise income tax rates. But if you're looking at the bigger picture, then the overall fiscal pressures on the country and the government are eased only as a consequence of incredibly optimistic projections and claims. You see what I mean about it being complicated? And what would you rather, try and work this stuff out or just listen to someone shouting liar at Rachel Reeves without pausing for a nanosecond to explain what she lied about, why she lied, or why you never shouted lies or liar at actual liars like Boris Johnson and Nigel Farage? It's mad, right? The UK, I don't know. I'm going through one of those phases. I go through phases of thinking, oh, I can't bang this drum every single day. And then I go through phases of thinking there is no more important drum to bang. People deserve better. Anyone shouting liar at Rachel Reeves today without being able to tell you exactly what it is that they're cross about or she has lied about, on the one hand, and then on the other hand, people actually explaining what has gone on. But the people shouting liar have got a much easier song to sing than the people providing complicated analysis. That's the way of the world, but just because it's difficult doesn't mean you shouldn't try your hardest to get your head around it, especially if you do what I do for a living. And speaking of people who do what I do for a living, we will be joined by another LBC legend later this hour to discuss the passing of arguably the greatest LBC legend of them all, Brian Hayes, who it was announced yesterday has died. The previous incumbent of this very slot, and by far the finest incumbent of this slot ever to occupy it. But that'll be coming up just before 1 o'clock today. It is 7 minutes after 12. So I saw the headline and I thought, oh, I don't really want to pick a fight with David Gandy. And then I read a little more about what he said on that dreadful BBC programme yesterday morning, and I realised I don't need to pick a fight with him. I've just got one area of disagreement. So David Gandy, if you don't know, is, I think, the best-paid male model if not in the world, then certainly in the country. He's, as you'd expect, an extremely handsome man. For people of my age, he's got a touch of the Clive Owens about him, which is, you know, very high praise indeed to anybody who enjoyed watching Chancellor as much as I did. And of course, myriad subsequent performances as well. He's 45 years old. He's Britain's highest paid male model. And he said some wonderful things yesterday about masculinity and the role of men. So you could snigger at this. It all goes a little bit Steve Baker, fast catamaran sailing. But I mean, it equally holds water. He says, people look at me and they say, when we look at you, you seem to define masculinity. God, that's weird. I get that as well. I've always, people are always coming up to me and saying, when we look at you, you seem to define masculinity. And I say, this is David Gandy now, not me, how? Although I say that as well. When people come up to me and say, you seem to define masculinity, I say, how? And they say, this is David Gandy now, not me, well, the fact that you're into your classic cars, your suits, your watches, you're a skier, you're this big figure. And I respond, this is the bit I really like. Well, yes, but also I do the washing, I do the cleaning, I do the school run. So a model's life being what it is, David Gandy and his wife have a division of domestic labour that rests heavily on him. He has, if you like, subverted gender stereotypes by being essentially a stay-at-home dad while his partner goes out to work. And that's really nice, because he makes a brilliant point, saying our roles have changed. We are the first generation, my age, where we're seeing the dads who have to take on a different role. One of the key things is there are not enough narratives about good men. Now, I agree with that as well. And I obviously agree with the comments he made about Andrew Tate, the alleged people trafficker and sex offender and hideous misogynist. Nothing alleged about that, by the way. And the impact that men like him are having on vulnerable males. The idea of masculinity, Gandy says, to me is quite broad. There's not one thing that fits all. And he points out that a lot of the nonsense coming out of the mouths of people like Tate, this extreme form of pseudo-masculinity, my words, not his, are incredibly damaging. And I agree with all of that. But then he picks on Daddy Pig. And I think this is really interesting. I think this is really interesting because I noticed this a lot around the time I was watching Peppa Pig, approximately 417 times a day. And the accusation was that Daddy Pig was a bit of a doofus and that this was damaging or dangerous because of the message that it sent to young children. And I've thought about, oddly, I have thought about this long and hard. Not so much recently, because I haven't had to watch Peppa Pig for, well, I say had to. I had no problem watching Peppa Pig 417 times a day. It's an absolutely brilliant animation. It's so wholesome. It's so lovely. It's close to perfect, actually, as animations go. The moment that they grow out of In the Night Garden, which, while very beautiful, was not exactly very engaging for the adult viewer. It's a little bit kind of trippy almost. It had a sort of psychedelic element, but if you weren't, you know, into psychedelics, then there was very little point watching it as an adult. The moment when they matured, when they evolved from In the Night Garden to Peppa Pig, that was a magical moment, because you could get quite involved in Peppa Pig and all her little friends and George and his muddy puddles. Oh, and it's brilliant. And then I started reading the very occasional piece. It was adverts in particular. God, those were the good old days. Weren't they the good old days when people in public life complained about adverts portraying dads as doofuses instead of complaining about there being too many brown people in them? Oh, I miss those days when people would complain about adverts portraying dads as being a bit daft or a bit simple instead of people complaining about adverts having too many brown people in them, like that dreadful UKIP woman, reform woman. Daddy Pig apparently sort of helps to perpetrate stereotypes of dads being a bit daft or dads being a bit useless. And I just want to know whether you think there's anything in this. That's all. Because I think, respectfully, every single other thing that David Gandy said in this interview, I could not agree with more. You know, when you do something like this on the radio, there's a little bit of you that hopes the person will ring in. It's happened to me quite a lot over the years, sometimes in quite embarrassing ways, sometimes in rather lovely ways. So I don't want David Gandy to ring in thinking that I've had a pop at him for being stupid. He's clearly not stupid, and I agree with almost everything he said in this interview. I agree with everything he said about masculinity. I agree with everything he said about Andrew Tate. I agree with everything he said about domestic role reversals, everything he said about generational change. I think he's clearly a very thoughtful and intelligent man, which is a shame in a way, because if I went after him like a rat up a drainpipe, I'd say something obnoxious and he'd be a lot more likely to ring in. So there you go. That's the price I'm prepared to pay. I'm minimising the likelihood of David Gandy ringing in to compare skincare tips and regimes by being completely honest about what I think about his comments. I think he got absolutely everything right. Except the bit about Daddy Pig, which is just daft. Does anybody watch Liam Neeson in Taken and think, oh, I'm never going to live up to that as a dad? The idea that Liam Neeson in Taken, with his very particular set of skills, spoiler alert, his daughter gets kidnapped and he kills everyone responsible. Everyone. And some people who had nothing to do with it as well, probably, just get killed for good measure, caught in the crossfire, collateral damage. That to me is an unattainable ideal of fatherhood. If one of my girls got kidnapped, I like to think that I'd go after the people responsible and kill them all, often, I don't know, beating them to death with their own thigh bone or something, but I don't think I'd be up to that. I just haven't got the set of skills that's needed to beat people to death with their own thigh bone, having bitten it off in a fit of righteous fury. I will find you. I will find you! I couldn't do that. I know my limitations, and I'm no more likely to watch Taken and feel bad about being a dad than I am to watch Peppa Pig and feel bad about being a dad. But if you think about it, it is kind of hard to find dads at lower levels of popular culture who aren't borderline dorks. It's a word I haven't used for years. I hope it's still acceptable. I hope dorks haven't been cancelled. Have dorks been cancelled? Can we say dorks with a D for the avoidance of doubt? So, you know, Homer Simpson, most obviously, is a mega dork, but he's also a brilliant dad. Don't at me. He's a brilliant dad. He loves his children, even as they, or one of them in particular, leads him the merriest of dances. So, Fred Flintstone, nowhere near as clever as Wilma. Wilma is always... not getting the better of Fred Flintstone, but getting him out of bother, getting him out of trouble. Peppa Pig's dad, known as Daddy Pig, is pompous, but in a very endearing way. Brackets, I would say that, wouldn't I? Close brackets. He says, oh, I'm a bit of an expert. And then he'll try and make breakfast and leave the eggs stuck to the ceiling or something like that. His catchphrase in many ways is, I'm a bit of an expert. And he's not. He's not an expert at anything, but that makes you like him. And he loves his children. He'd do anything for them. There's something, I think, with respect to David Gandy, there's something a little bit pathetic about claiming that a cartoon character is representative of a deeper malaise. And I'm 90% confident with that position until I try to think of dads in children's programs who are not dorks. And I can't. A dad in a children's program who, or a dad in children's entertainment. Because even if you think of books, they're usually absent, aren't they? Like in the Famous Five or the Secret Seven, dad's nowhere to be seen. In the Railway Children, dad's nowhere to be seen. I'm showing my age a bit there. Let me think of something younger. There's no dad in the Hunger Games, is there? Isn't Katniss's dad not present either? So dads are either absent or idiots in children's literature and TV and programs. Is that a problem? 0345 6060 973. And this isn't one of those phone-ins where the question is rhetorical, because you're perfectly entitled to ring and say no, it's not a problem at all. But just as I find myself thinking about it, is it a problem that I can't think of anybody? So for every Daddy Pig, I can't reach for Liam Neeson. You're not going to sit down and watch Taken with your four-year-old, are you? If you are, it's a social services case. So who are the characters in children's entertainment, whether it's on screen or on the page, where dads are portrayed as being a bit cool? Maybe I've got my next book, actually. I could do a children's book with a cool dad. Are there any? And that's only part of the question. The other part, the bigger part, is, of course, does it matter? 03456060973. With the caveat that I agree with every single other thing you said, and I really do, actually. I'm not being glib or facetious. I just think singling out Daddy Pig as problematic. He says, Peppa Pig is an example. From a man's point of view, you're saying, well, why are my children reading this book and the dad is a useless fool? I think on a meta level, David, I think you're misreading Daddy Pig, actually. I don't think he is a useless fool at all. But even if you thought that he was, so what? Hit the numbers now. Good Lord, the phone lines are full. Why? How can they be full? Let's find out what people have got to say about this in a moment. Remember, some of the people who've rung in might be idiots, in which case Eleanor will politely tell them to clear off and you'll be able to grab the phone line that they've shortly vacated. So don't stop trying to get through. You can never have too many good calls. But really? Daddy Pig? Problematic? Why?
This is LBC.
Fashion houses use black to add luxury to their collections. So, we at Volvo are following their lead with our Black Edition range. A glossy black grille, signature badging and sleek black alloys make for a bold statement. Interior detailing, contemporary black upholstery and decor add finesse. Receive a complimentary upgrade to the Volvo Black Edition range during our Black Edition event between 19th November and 3rd December. Order online at volvocars.com or book an appointment at your local Volvo retailer to find out more. And turn every road into a catwalk.
Retail offer applies to Black Edition new car orders from the 19th of November to the 3rd of December. Available at the equivalent cost of Standard Plus, Plus Pro or Ultra, subject to availability, terms apply.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
While all the Whos of Whoville were at McDonald's eating, the Grinch from his lair started plotting and scheming. Gherkin-flavoured fries and odd socks will send them crackers. So try the Grinch's new meal and head down to Macca's. Until 4th of Jan from 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary while stocks last. Grinched for adults.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
12:19 is the time. Why the supermodel David Gandy has beef with Peppa Pig's dad is, I grant you, quite an agreeable headline. But should he have beef with Daddy Pig is the slightly unexpected question that I'm asking you for some of this hour. There's quite a lot of other stuff to get through. Aggie Chambray will bring us up to date with the Prime Minister's speech shortly. And I'll be joined by, I nearly said, a fellow LBC legend. Good God, even by my standards that would have been hideous. But I will be joined by a genuine LBC legend to discuss the passing of another genuine LBC legend, the great and sadly now late Brian Hayes. That will be just before 1 o'clock today. But before that, Daddy Pig. Damon is in Hemel Hempstead. Damon, what would you like to say?
James, today is a historic day. Never in the history of LBC have I ever agreed with anything you've ever said before.
Good Lord.
Totally political
nurse,
scale.
Nurse. Thank you. She's on her way, mate. Carry on.
Daddy Pig is an absolute gentleman. There is nothing wrong at all with Daddy Pig.
The phone line's gone south. That's not. I mean, the phone line genuinely has gone south. Do you? Try and keep it up, can we? do you understand where he's coming from? I mean, he gets everything wrong, doesn't he?
No,
like
he
you.
He's crap at DIY.
Just mind your language slightly. He's not just bad at DIY. He gets everything wrong.
No,
but that's why you like him. That's why you like him, because you do too. That's what you opened with. You've given the game away. You're also wrong about everything.
I am Daddy Pig. I'm the kosher Daddy Pig. I tell you, he is a well-respected concrete engineer. He goes abroad and overseas. He's well known.
You're closer to this age-wise than I am, aren't you? You're still in it. I'd forgotten that.
I'm 66 years old with a 3-year-old.
Good Lord.
And I'm the stay-at-home dad.
Oh, that's nice.
And I just think that there's nothing wrong with him. He's no doofus at all. He provides for his family, although Mummy Pig works as well. She's an author. But, Daddy Pig does his bit.
Also, Granddad Pig is a very competent male, isn't he? A very competent role model, and you can have one, but okay, because this is sent in good faith, and there is some sense in it. Okay, a child psychologist, this is from John, watching Peppa Pig, would probably single out Daddy Pig as the real weak link, not because he's mean, but because he's a walking bundle of unhelpful modelling wrapped in a polite snort. He's constantly the butt of the joke. He's clueless with maps. He's mocked for his weight. He's hopeless at DIY. He's easily flustered and generally positioned as the bumbling adult who gets rescued by everyone else. Kids absorb patterns fast, and Daddy Pig mostly teaches them that dads are incompetent, easily teased, and not to be taken seriously. That might sound harmless, but it does set up a weird dynamic where mum does the real emotional labour, dad blunders through life, and the kids get to laugh at him without any pushback. He's written this very quickly. From a developmental point of view, it's not great. There's no modelling of accountable fatherhood, no emotional regulation, no problem solving, no repair, just a soft target who shrugs off being mocked and somehow stays cheerful. Well, that's an inspiring example as well. Psychologists don't see him as dangerous, just hollow. If you want kids to learn what a capable, present, emotionally engaged parent looks like, Daddy Pig is not the blueprint. Fine for a laugh, but not the standard you'd want them imprinting on. There's actually some mileage in that.
It's children's entertainment. It's absolute nonsense. Tell that child psychologist to go and do some real work. That's the biggest load of nonsense I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah. Okay. 23 minutes after 12 is the time. Just for the avoidance of doubt, there are a few more important jobs in the world than being a child psychologist. Otherwise, you could grow up to be a bundle of repressed feelings, contradictions, and epic wrongness, not mentioning any names. I wonder what a child psychologist would do, or what a psychologist, what an adult psychologist would do with Daddy Pig. Because his dad, his granddad Pig, daddy's daddy, or mummy's daddy. Damon would know, wouldn't he, off the top of his head. Jess is in Barnet. Jess, what made you pick up the phone?
Hiya. So I think overall, most kids' programmes, the portrayal of dads is problematic.
Yeah, okay.
Having said that, there is a really good role model for dads in, I'd say, the direct competitor to Peppa Pig, which is Bluey.
That came too late for me. He's called Bandit, isn't he? Okay, I've got about a million people have sent me that, saying that Bluey is a good example.
So Bandit is also problematic, though. Bandit is the quintessential perfect dad, and he's unattainable.
Hey, we have feelings too.
No, I just think a lot of dads say this, that Bandit is just too perfect. There is no way you could be Bandit.
So you can't live up to that example,
no.
And you can't really live down to Daddy Pig's example.
Exactly. You've got Bandit who, you know, just takes a pummeling all the time from his kids, sacrifices himself constantly for them. It's not realistic.
But is it supposed to be realistic? I mean, because it is... I actually leaned... A lot of people suggesting that John's message was written by AI. I've got no way of knowing, but it did seem implausibly long, given the time that was available for him to write it. I do think there's something in that, but I also see it as... It's a children's cartoon. How much analysis should we really be doing of it?
Well, if we're assuming that parents are watching this...
Yes.
I'm a parent, I'm watching it, my husband's watching it. Then they are looking at this as potential role models. And if you've got someone like Bandit there, you think, well, this is just completely impossible. I'm not going to even remotely try.
I've got an almost unanimous paean of praise here for Bandit and Bluey, and yet I've never seen it, oddly, because of my age and my children's age. But I understand what you're saying without having the cultural reference point that I need. But people feel less troubled by seeing dads portrayed as infallible than they do by seeing dads portrayed as very, very fallible for some reason. And that might be part of the problem.
Well, yeah, coming back to Daddy Pig,
yes.
I'd say he's most problematic because he's just... I see him and I hear the phrase weaponized incompetence.
Yeah.
He's just doing everything wrong, and somehow that's acceptable.
But he keeps trying. He's not using it to get out of doing jobs. I mean, you know, what am I doing? I'm live on the radio defending Daddy Pig against accusations of weaponized incompetence. He tries his best. I think he's a triumph of hope over expectation or hope over experience, because he messes everything up, and yet the next episode, here he is trying to fix a hole in the roof or something like that.
Yes, unjustified confidence. potentially, which is also something that...
men suffer from. Oh, Lord, you're making me think of Boris Johnson. I'm never going to forgive you for that. Making me think I'm going to see Daddy Pig and I'm going to think of Boris Johnson now. In fact, Miranda's ahead of me. She says, have Daddy Pig and Boris Johnson ever been seen at the same time? But Daddy Pig's nice. He is nice, despite all of these appalling accusations being levelled at him by David Gandy and you. He is nice, right?
Are you asking me?
Yes.
Yeah, he is nice.
Well, that's good.
It's just, imagine if Mummy Pig acted the way Daddy Pig did. I don't think we'd have Pepper or George to talk about.
No, all right, okay. Here's what I also hear. And you're absolutely right with the Mummy Pig point. But we, and by that I mean men, have enjoyed cultural supremacy for pretty much the entire history of the human race. Only really, in the sort of first half of the last century, did the tales begin to tip ever so slightly away from us. There is, and you know this better than I do, a reason why it's very hard to think of a dozen statues of women that are currently on display in this country. Women have been compelled and forced to take the back seat and to do the, the menial work and to be the less competent and the less impressive. And now we have a program or a succession of programs in which the daddy is a bit of a plonker and men are up in arms about it. Surely you could see it as a push back against the patriarchy.
Potentially. I think you could also be calling in saying, where's my incompetent mummy pig? Why is it not okay for us to be...
So Bluey's dad and Pepper's mum are the paragons of unattainable virtue.
Yes. I do think that occasionally...
What would happen if they got together?
I don't think anyone would watch it.
That would be so boring, wouldn't it? Everything would be... Yes. Well, do we like this conversation? Who'd have thought? It's coming up to 12:30. As I mentioned, we need to talk. We're going to have to take a bit of time off Peppa Pig to talk about the Prime Minister. How annoying. And then nothing annoying at all about being joined by Clive Bull, a genuine LBC legend, to talk to me and you about the passing of arguably the greatest LBC legend of them all, Brian Hayes, who left us yesterday. The time now is approaching 12:30, and Amelia Cox has your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer has rejected suggestions Rachel Reeves misled the public over the country's finances in the run-up to last week's budget. The Prime Minister has been defending the statement after she raised taxes by £26 billion. Labour MP Tulip Sadiq has described a corruption trial in Bangladesh, sentencing her to 2 years in prison, as flawed and farcical. She's always rejected the allegations linked to her aunt Sheikh Hasina, the country's deposed Prime Minister. And a man accused of a stabbing spree on a train in Cambridgeshire will go on trial next year. 32-year-old Anthony Williams refused to attend this morning's hearing at Cambridge Crown Court over last month's attack. LBC weather, windy with outbreaks of rain. This will be heavy in Wales and Western England. Rain clearing from the north, but starting again in Northern Ireland and Southern Scotland later. A high of 14 degrees.
Across the world, millions of people are living through conflict, causing families to go without food, healthcare and the most basic of essentials. Thanks to Christian Aid, Sheila Fogarty will speak to their CEO, Patrick Watt, about their campaign to raise awareness and funds to help families fleeing conflict get life-saving supplies. That's this Wednesday with Sheila Fogarty. I'm James O'Brien. It's 12:31.
This is LBC.
At Laithwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide, searching high, and we mean really high, and low, and we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf, we don't go there. Off the beaten track, we certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at laithwaite.co.uk. Laithwaite. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
A Southern train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
A safe trip begins with T-R-I-P. Take a road trip with your family. Get there safely. Do your trip checks. Tea, drop up on island fuel, and rest every time.
2 hours to I inspect tire pressure and tread. Prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with
Think. Do the 4-trip checks before every long journey. National Highways.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345-6060-973.
12:33 is the time. A few examples of Daddy Pig's behaviour for people not fully across the conversation, the very important conversation that we've been having. When Daddy Pig is playing football, for example, with Ms. Rabbit, he receives a red card from his own daughter, Pepper, after using his hands to grab... Oh, my God, it's more Boris Johnson parallels. He uses his hands to grab the ball, and Pepper says to him, "That's not how you play football. You're being a bit silly." He often forgets what day it is. He's shown relaxing with a newspaper in one episode as he enjoys doing nothing on Saturdays, at which point Mummy Pig explains it's not in fact the weekend and he's going to be late for work. He's described as grumpy because he's struggling to read a map, as a consequence of which the entire family becomes lost and Mummy Pig has to phone her father for help. Ah, so Grandad Pig is Mummy Pig's daddy. All the big topics on the programme today. And finally, do you remember Soft Play? If you're of my age, or you're probably still in the middle of it if you're younger and you have children. Daddy Pig gets stuck while attempting to rescue Mummy Pig from a tunnel at a Soft Play centre. In his defence, he did actually predict that that was going to happen, or at least he said bad things always happen to him. And this has upset the supermodel David Gandy, who feels, among many other very, very valid points, that Daddy Pig presents a poor... not even role model, a poor perspective for children on what a father could and should be. 12:34 is the time. Aggie Chambray is here, not to talk about Peppa Pig, but to talk about Keir Starmer. A speech today, a surprisingly important speech, given the discourse in which it takes place. What was he most at pains to stress, and what was he supposed to be talking about before he decided to address some of the points being raised by his friends in His Majesty's media?
What he wanted to talk about was how the budget was a positive budget and how he had taken decisions, but he was proud of it. He said the word proud over and over and over again. And I think this was him trying to sort of grab back, wrestle back the narrative, or attempt to wrestle back the narrative of a budget, which has, the narrative has been spiralling away from them over the weekend because of all these accusations about Rachel Reeves and indeed by him about misleading the public. And it was interesting, James, I don't think he mentioned Rachel Reeves' name once during this speech and then subsequent Q&A. This really felt like him taking responsibility for the budget and for the entire budget process.
I'm proud we scrapped the two-child limit. I'm proud we're lifting over 500,000 children out of poverty. Proud we raised the national minimum wage again. That is what a Labour government is for, making life better for working families, unlocking their potential, and giving our children a fair chance to get on. And that is the story of the budget. There were necessary choices. Of course there were. Fair choices, I would argue. Tax rises do make life harder for people. I understand that. It's obvious. And I'm not going to pretend that there aren't alternatives. Politics is always about making choices. We could have cut public services. We could have ignored child poverty. We could have rolled the dice with extra borrowing. But I firmly believe that those options have been tested to destruction.
But James, as you may have expected, question after question after question after question was about whether or not the Chancellor, and indeed he, misled the public over how bad the public finances were in the lead up to the budget. This was the response when he was asked for the first time.
There was an OBR productivity review. The result of that was there was £16 billion less than we might otherwise have had. So we had, on the one hand, £16 billion less than we might otherwise have had. We had clear commitments that we'd made throughout the process as to what it was we were going to achieve. Therefore, against that backdrop, it was inevitable that we would always have to raise revenue. So there's no misleading there. During the overall process, the numbers improved.
There was no misleading there. He said that over and over again when he was asked various different times. At one stage, he said, I think we have addressed this already. And he did actually say for the first time, too, that there was a point where the government thought that they would have to breach the manifesto in order to achieve what we wanted to achieve. Later on, it became possible to do it without the manifesto breach. But that was the first time they had said, or at least he had said in public, that that was really, really on the table. The other thing he tried to sort of turn the page on the budget talk and those accusations was to talk about the broken welfare system as he pledged to try and again to reform it.
For too long, our welfare system has trapped people in poverty. And poverty is always a barrier to potential. That's why we scrapped the two-child limit. But we also have to confront the reality that our welfare state is trapping people not just in poverty, but out of work. Young people in particular. And that is a poverty of ambition.
There was not a huge amount of detail on how exactly he wanted to reform the welfare system. Talked about two reviews that are going on, but there did seem to be a bit of a difference in how he was talking about it before, when the government had tried to reform the welfare system and obviously forced into that humiliating U-turn. They talked about a lot about the money that they needed to save, and this time talking a lot about the fact that it was a moral mission. Whether or not, James, this will be enough to turn the page and stop those questions and accusations about whether or not he and the Chancellor misled the public, I'm not sure.
Do forgive me if you don't know the answer to this question. Would this stuff have come out anyway?
The
stuff
OBR
that was released on Friday, not the original leak, but the stuff that came out on Friday. Because the first four projections of this year, the first four forecasts of this year, all made the point about productivity declines, downgrades being offset slightly by strong wage growth. So what was new?
So the forecast that the Office for Budget Responsibility gave the Chancellor in the lead up to the budget were private forecasts that normally we would not see. The only reason we saw them was because Richard Hughes, the boss of the OBR, basically wanted to highlight how chaotic the process had been. So he wrote to the Treasury Select Committee and that letter was published. This is not information we would normally have.
Okay, but we did have the five public forecast, including the one on November the 14th, that made the point explicitly that the strong wage growth was offsetting some of the downgrade in productivity that had been expected to constrain the Chancellor.
Yes, so we had those, but we did not have and would not have had these forecasts. And I think that is why there is quite so much consternation, because, of course, Rachel Reeves did those various scene setters, that big scene setter in the morning where she talked about the productivity but did not talk about the fact that that was going to be offset. And that is why these accusations of her misleading the public are...
She also, of course, talked about all of the other things that were going to be needed to be addressed, but none of which are susceptible to accusations of misleading or lies. But it's this one that people are getting very excited about. And it's the same bloke whose job is on the line, the head of the OBR, who I think perhaps unfairly, because it was a Reuters journalist who correctly guessed what the website address would be for the leak, for the detail that hadn't actually been officially published but had been put online. So then they would publicise the link, presumably, and say, go and have a look now, but they'd put that up in advance. A Reuters journalist worked it out. Everybody got to see the budget before Rachel Reeves had actually got to their feet. He's quite a key character in this week's news, isn't he?
He's quite a key character, and we're going to find out later today about
the Select Committee today.
Or? The Select Committee's at 10 o'clock tomorrow, but this afternoon we're going to get the report into how that report was leaked. I mean, it sounds like we've worked out how it was leaked. Basically, it was the fact that the month had changed.
And for people who don't pay an enormous amount of attention to politics, you mention everybody asks the same question again and again and again. Why? Why in a space like that, where you've got an opportunity to ask anything you want of the Prime Minister, why would anybody ask a question that he's already answered, for example, twice?
Well, to be fair to a lot of people, I didn't get a question, which seems unfair, but a lot of people did ask about welfare as a second question.
Right.
I think the reason people asked the same question again and again was because, to be frank, people may have felt, A, that the answer was unsatisfactory, the fact that
To them.
They felt that he just said over and over again, I didn't mislead. There were questions that he specifically did not answer. And I think for broadcast colleagues as well, sometimes if you are producing a TV package for later, you want to have your own question as part of that. So the question, like we talked about last week, the question can be as important as the answer.
Because you wouldn't want to put Chris Mason's question up on your show. You'd want to put your question up on your show or my show. So newspaper journalists actually were oddly a little bit more diverse and varied in their questioning at today's press conference than the broadcast journalists were. I'd seen that somewhere else and I didn't quite understand why, but I do now. It's just you need your clip.
Sean
Bray, many thanks indeed. Why didn't you get a question? Do they not know that you're feeding into this programme, the most popular current affairs talk show on commercial radio in the whole of the United Kingdom?
I'll feed that back.
Did GBeebies get a question?
GBeebies did get a question.
How many viewers have they got now? 11?
I don't have the numbers to hand.
Or has it gone down? It is 12:42. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And, curiouser and curiouser. Maybe didn't give Aggie a question because they knew we were talking about Peppa Pig on the programme later. But how would they have known that? I didn't even know we were going to be talking about Peppa Pig on the programme until we started talking about Peppa Pig on the programme. And why are we talking about Peppa Pig? Because of his portrayal as a bit of a doofus dad, and whether or not that has any impact on children's perceptions of their own dad or family dynamics or something broader. I was only being slightly tongue-in-cheek when I suggested that this is in fact a pushback against the patriarchy. And then you reminded me, it's a well-established trope, not just in cartoons. Think of all the sitcoms. The man is always a bit of a plonker in sitcoms. Frank Spencer, The Good Life, George and Mildred, Terry and June, Rising Damp. Well, it's not a marriage, is it? That's just Leonard Rossiter. Sitcoms always involve, because that's subverting the prevalent cultural norm. The prevalent cultural norm is that, oh, men are great and they've got all the answers. So if you want to make something funny, you make the man a bit silly. Like Homer Simpson, as I mentioned at the beginning of this hour. Well, that's my theory anyway. What's yours? It is, let's squeeze in Najiba in Brookman's Park. What would you like to say, Najiba?
Hi there, James. Hello. I completely agree with you in that I just think that it's been taken out of context and just it's just for a laugh. I mean, most of the time when you sit down with your 2-year-old, 3-year-old to watch TV, you are sitting with them. They need to have some element of fun for the parents as well. And trust me and my husband have loved Peppa Pig.
Same.
And we thought it's really funny. It makes it lighthearted for the parents and a bit enjoyable for the parent to watch something with the child as well. I just think you're reading too deep in. People are reading too deep into it. I don't think it's going to have such a major effect on the way the child sees the dad. I think he's a great dad.
Yeah, I think he's a great. He's certainly a very loving dad, and they think he's funny,
loving.
And they climb on him like he's a sort of big old bouncy castle, and he's a bit daft. From a man's point of view, so again, I stress again, I don't know why I'm at such pains to defend David Gandy's honour. He's perfectly capable of doing it himself. But in a wide-ranging interview in which he made myriad absolutely brilliant points, when he complains about this character being portrayed as a useless fool, he's quite badly misjudging Daddy Pig, and he's very much over-egging the pudding as well.
Yes, absolutely. I just think that, you know, dads are meant to be that cuddly, very friendly, warm character. And Daddy Pig really is.
And how boring would it be? Imagine if he did all these jobs really well.
It'd
be so boring. I'm going to go and make breakfast. And then he just serves up a really nice breakfast. Where's the jeopardy in that? What are we all supposed to laugh at? I'm going to go and fix the shower. And he fixes the shower. He doesn't flood the whole house. Where's the fun in that? Where's the storyline in that? Where's the punchline there? I'm a bit of an expert. And he actually is a bit of an expert. That'd be rubbish. It's only funny because he keeps saying he's a bit of an expert. And guess what? He's not. It's 12:46.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
The truth, the whole truth, and leave a key part of the truth out. Are you buying the PM's tax explanation? And meet the 24-year-old, 800 job applications down and still looking for work.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or our new LBC app.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
At Laithwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide. Searching high, and we mean really high, and low. And we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf? We don't go there. Off the beaten track? We certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at laithwaites.co.uk. Laithwaites. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
Kev, it's Black Friday madness. Customers, calls, emails.
Then you need something built for busy, like iPhone 17. And right now, you can save £144 on a 36-month plan in EE's Black Friday sale. iPhone 17, a delight at work, even when your coffee's gone cold.
Nice one, Kev. Have a fresh hot coffee on me.
Search EE Business today. BT and EE, better for business.
Excludes 20% VAT, ends 4th December. Terms apply.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
New In, the latest custom-fit rechargeable hearing devices. Discreet, comfortable and smart enough to help you catch every moment. Book a free hearing test at bootshearingcare.com. T's and C's apply.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Leading Britain's conversation. LBC with James O'Brien.
12:49 is the time, and it is now a moment that you will, I'm sure, appreciate. Whether or not you were familiar with the work of Brian Hayes or not, then you'll have to trust me and my colleagues when we tell you that he, in many ways, if he didn't invent the genre of radio that we all attempt to provide you with every day, then he certainly revolutionised it. I'm going to have a little listen to some of his moments, but goodness me, the idea of distilling a career like his and the revolutionary approach to radio that he pioneered into a short sort of greatest hits reel is impossible. But it will give you a flavour of why the world of radio today is in mourning.
This is Brian Hayes on LBC Radio in London, with the first of three links with Radio Moscow associated with the visit of the Soviet leader, Mikhail Gorbachev.
In the next hour, we want to hear from you. We want to know what you think of Concorde and how you react to the discussion you've heard on the programme today. 353-8111. Good morning. If you've just joined us, welcome to our programme. It was once reported that Margaret Thatcher, the Conservative leader of the opposition, said, "In politics, if you want anything said, ask a man. If you want anything done, ask a woman." Margaret Thatcher is our guest this morning on LBC, and you can phone her on this number, 353-8111. Good morning to you, Mrs. Thatcher.
Good morning.
Let's talk first to Elsie. Hello, Elsie.
Hello.
Yes, you're talking to Mrs. Thatcher now.
Hello.
Mrs. Thatcher, good morning, how do you Elsie. Feel in being the leader of the Conservative Party?
Yes.
How do you feel, was the question, was it?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite get it, Elsie.
How do you feel being the leader?
How do I feel?
Pretty good,
me,
I think.
I feel a great responsibility, naturally. Anyone being the leader of a major party, and I just hope that when the testing time comes, which after all is an election, I'll be able to lead them to victory.
12:51 is the time. 1976, he started on LBC. I was four at the time. I won't ask Clive Bull, who, of course, is with you Friday, Saturday and Sunday mornings on LBC, how old he was in 1976. But your paths did cross professionally, Clive.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I was listening... I was at school when he started, I should hasten to add, but I ended up working with him. I was To begin with, I was what we now call an AP, an assistant producer, basically answering the phones, and I was making the coffee and stuff. So I worked with him then, and gradually worked with him and got to know him. He became a very good friend. So I knew him for a good 40 years plus.
What did he do differently from what had gone before, and indeed, in many ways, what has followed?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you use the word pioneer. I think that's absolutely right. He took over. There was a bloke in your slot called George Gale, who I don't know whether you remember. He was a kind of Express columnist, and the morning phone-in was him coming in, basically making a speech about the news of the day, and then he'd go to Bob in Boreham Wood, and Bob would have his say, and then he'd just go, and then it would be Susan, and then it would be somebody else, and there would be no interaction. And Brian took over and shocked people, really, by daring to actually ask them difficult questions, like, what do you mean, and questioning the logic and the facts, and he had great attention to detail. I should say he was not a shock jock.
No, of course.
It was very much about analysing people's arguments and questioning. But that really did revolutionise phone-ins, because before that it was just have your say.
Well, I suppose both models are still represented on the station, although neither of us will speculate about who both best represents which approach to the show. You speak really of a proper respect for the caller and the listener that is not always something we can take for granted with presenters.
Yeah, I think that's true. That was the main thing, although he did interview a lot of
yes,
politicians,
of course.
And I mean, that Margaret Thatcher one, but he told me afterwards, much later, when he often reminisced about that. That was his first programme.
Wow.
And the first phone-in with, she'd just become the leader of the opposition. And that sounded quite polite, what we heard there, but it went on and it became very awkward for her, and she refused to ever go back on that programme again because she didn't like being put on the spot.
That's a badge of honour. What was he like off air?
He was lovely. Yeah, this is the thing. People were rather intimidated and a little bit scared by him because he was forthright. He would always say what he thought. He'd sit down in the theatre and say, well, come on then, start entertaining me, if they were slow to open the curtains. But he was ultimately a very, very nice man, very thoughtful and kind, and a very good friend.
And very generous as well, wasn't he? I didn't know that, partly because of my age and partly because I didn't grow up in London. So I first encountered him when he crossed over to the BBC and watched him live in the studio when I was contributing to a programme, and just thought, I had no idea you could do this kind of thing for a living. I just didn't know that you could adopt this approach, a curiosity and interest in the news, and of course he would be limited on what opinions he could express in that show, but he wasn't when he was here. And just sort of recognising that it was possible to do it. But he also had a reputation for being a bruiser, as you mentioned, on air, sometimes described as the rudest man on the airwaves. But looking at it with the benefit of hindsight and listening to what you've just said, Clive, that was probably largely because people weren't used to either having their positions challenged or hearing other people having their positions
exactly.
challenged. So it wasn't actually rude at all. It was, in a sense, it was respectful.
Yeah, very much so. And the other interesting thing about him is that his background, because he really came from, well, you probably read, he was the son of a miner. He left school at 15, came over from Australia. A lot of people came from Australia to work in commercial radio because Britain had no history of commercial radio. And he was a self-made man, really. He became very well informed on politics and world affairs, literature, drama, and that was all just his doing, really. And I think that showed that he was kind of
one suitcase. Yeah, he was working as an usher in the West End. I suppose that was the other way he could have gone. You've mentioned that he loved theatre, but happily he didn't. He settled in here and beyond. Oh, man. When did you last see him, if that's not an inappropriate question? Or hear from him?
I did see him. I mean, he became gradually more frail. So I saw him in the last couple of years, and he was still, even though he was, you know, suffering with memory problems and stuff, his very strong personality even then was coming through, and he will be much missed.
Fully engaged. Clive Bull, thank you. One LBC legend there, paying proper tribute to another. Well, I just sit here reflecting on how brilliant they both are. Clive Bull, thank you. And the late Brian Hayes, who has died at the age of 87. And it's fascinating, actually, if you think that Clive just took us back the best part of 50 years to 1976. And that idea that radio phone-ins used to just involve people being invited to come on, have their say, and then go away again, utterly unchallenged and unexamined and unquestioned. Paris had thought that that should still be permitted to unfold, whereas Brian changed the format for all of us, or most of us, in that you now are expected to be able to explain yourself or to account for the opinion that you've ended up with, or indeed to answer the why or the what do you mean by that word or whatever it may be. The Daily Telegraph have published an utterly charming obituary of him, which is rather nice. And I would urge you to have a little look at that as well, because it covers quite a lot of the territory that Clive just covered, but more as well. It was the list of guests as well. Did you listen to him? You must have known him at Five Live, Sue.
I did, yeah, briefly. When I first started at Five Live, he was well established there. And obviously, as all the journalism that Clive was describing was all true, but he was always incredibly warm and welcoming as a colleague, which, when you're new to a big network station, is really important, and he just made me feel very welcome there.
Never stopped being a listener either. Mm. Occasionally get the sort of second-hand, I think on two occasions, first-hand notes from his desk about the way that we'd handled things here.
Oh, really?
Yes. Thank you, Sheila. That is it from me for today. If you've missed any of today's show, then you can listen back on Catch Up on Global Player, or of course, the LBC app, where you can stay up to date on the top stories and opinions. You can put your news categories in the order you want. You can pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily, the best bits from this show every day, and Full Disclosure, the long-form interview series. Download the official LBC app. I don't know why I say form. It's just a long interview. The long interview series. There you go. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thanks very much, James. At 3 today, the former president-elect of the Oxford Union, George Abaronye, has told LBC he and his family have been racially abused and threatened with violence over the comments he made that appeared to celebrate Charlie Kirk's death. He has apologised for them and is embarrassed by them. I think his story is a tale for our rather unforgiving time, so let's talk about that at 3. Still with young people, Danny, 24-year-old accounts executive, lost his job a while ago. 800 applications on. He is still looking. He is not on benefits. Keir Starmer addressed youth unemployment in his speech this morning, didn't he? But what on earth are we going to do about it? But I'm going to start with whether, in that same speech, the Prime Minister has done enough to explain to you why he and Rachel Reeves still increased your income tax last week.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Sir Keir Starmer insists his Chancellor did not mislead the public over the state of the country's finances ahead of her budget last week. The Prime Minister has been defending Rachel Reeves' plan, which included £26 billion of tax rises. Excuse me. He also revealed he is proud of the decision to lift the two-child benefit cap. Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch has told LBC she thinks his address this morning reveals he lacks confidence in the Chancellor.
This was a panicked press conference, a word salad in response to a budget that he can clearly see is unravelling. And that is a sign of a Prime Minister who's not actually very comfortable. I'm astonished that he would say he was proud of the budget. It was a budget for benefits. Working people are becoming poorer because of that budget. He should not be proud. He should be ashamed.
Tulip Sadiq has described a corruption trial sentencing her to 2 years in jail in Bangladesh as farcical. The allegations against the Labour MP and former minister are linked to her aunt Sheikh Hasina, who is the country's former prime minister. A man accused of carrying out a stabbing spree on a train in Cambridgeshire, as well as separate attacks in the lead-up, will go on trial next year. 32-year-old Anthony Williams refused to attend the hearing at Cambridge Crown Court earlier. He faces 13 counts of attempted murder. Forecasters have warned there is a risk to life in South Wales due to heavy rain. The Met Office is concerned about fast-flowing flood water, with almost a month's worth expected today. Sharon Elwood is from a food bank in Pontypridd and is working on flood action and awareness in the town.
We've just come into what we class as flood season. Do you know, the physical and mental health, the impact on people is absolutely devastating to see. People are absolutely exhausted. It's weather watch all the time, river level watch, culvert watch, drainage infrastructure watch. It just never ends.
And temporary staff hired to cover Birmingham bin strikes are joining them on picket lines. It marks the first day of industrial action by the agency Refuge Workers. The wider strike began in January as part of a pay row with Birmingham City Council. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 16 points at 97.04. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.13. LBC weather, windy with outbreaks of rain. This will be heavy in Wales and Western England. Rain clearing from the north, but starting again in Northern Ireland and Southern Scotland later. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
There's always a lot going on. I'm on site getting the job done, running the business too, payments, invoices, admin, all on me. But now with Tap to Pay, I can take payments there and then, and Sage sorts the admin afterwards. Everything's sorted in the background, so I don't spend hours doing it later. Magic.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience, helping British businesses like Mike at Residual Electrical Contractors. That's more than artificial intelligence, that's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. Hostages to fortune is the expression that came to mind this morning as I was listening to Keir Starmer's speech. He and the government more generally, since they came to power, have been making themselves hostages to fortune with various definitive statements about what they will and won't do next and where they are now. And I think today's hostage to fortune statement was, we have now walked through the narrowest part of the tunnel. Well, I hope he's right, but I do wonder. I was listening to that speech on the train on the way into work today. You know, some of the very usual expected things, you know, talking with high praise about the assistance he's given on childcare, although a great deal of that hasn't yet trickled down to a lot of people's homes. Good for women, good for the economy, good for growth, help with cost of living, that kind of thing. Inequality of children when they start school, important stuff to address, and they are addressing it without any doubt, so that's all good. But the central question at the heart of that speech today, which he was asked in various different ways at the end of the speech, the central question was, why did you keep such vital information from the British people before then announcing that they are indeed going to be paying an awful lot of them, millions of us, more income tax, dressed up differently than an absolute rise in the rate of income tax, but without a doubt a raise in income tax? I want to know whether you are buying his explanation. Aggie Chambray, LBC's political correspondent, is here to tell us what his explanation was. And we'll hear from Henry Riley in a moment, LBC's reporter who's been speaking to the Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch. But as Aggie, first of all, his explanation was what?
In terms of whether or not the Chancellor and he misled the British public, he simply said, we did not mislead. He said that over and over again. As you allude to, that question was asked over and over again in slightly different forms. But he talked a lot about the downgrade in productivity from the Office for Budget Responsibility and kind of talking about that again. Now, the accusation is that they talked about that a lot before the budget, but didn't talk about the fact that that was offset by increases in real wages and inflation. So it didn't equate to this black hole.
And therefore greater tax receipts.
Exactly. So this didn't equate to this great black hole that was being briefed, talking about, you know, 20 to 30 billion pounds worth of the fact that was the black hole was that size. Well, that simply was not true. We found that out when the Office for Budget Responsibility published that extraordinary letter to the Treasury Select Committee. But we can hear now what the Prime Minister said when he was asked for the second time whether he misled the public.
I'm proud we scrapped the two-child limit. I'm proud we're lifting over 500,000 children out of poverty. Proud we've raised the national minimum wage again. That is what a Labour government is for, making life better for working families, unlocking their potential, and giving our children a fair chance to get on. And that is the story of the budget. There were necessary choices. Of course there were. Fair choices, I would argue. Tax rises do make life harder for people. I understand that. It's obvious. And I'm not going to pretend that there aren't alternatives. Politics is always about making choices. We could have cut public services. We could have ignored child poverty. We could have rolled the dice with extra borrowing. But I firmly believe that those options have been tested to destruction.
Now, that was the Prime Minister, I think, kind of trying to take the heat out of the narrative over the last few days and trying to paint a picture of the positive image he sees of the budget while still admitting that, of course, they made choices. They made political choices. And indeed, what we were just talking about, the fact that they chose to talk a lot about the productivity downgrade and did not talk about the fact that that was offset, that was a political choice too. It was interesting, Sheila. He also said for the first time, he had not said this before, that there was a point where the government was talking about whether they would have to breach the manifesto in order to achieve what they wanted to achieve, talking about income tax rises. Now, they haven't said that publicly before. But I also think it's worth noting that I don't think he mentioned the name of his chancellor at any point during that press conference. This really felt like him trying to take responsibility for the whole budget and also for the budget process too.
She kept saying in the speech, as we will remember, like a mantra, my choice. My choice. A Labour budget, my choice.
And this was him saying, my choice. I knew about it. And when he talked about the fact that he said we thought maybe there was a chance we'd have to increase income tax. He didn't quite say that, but talking about breaching manifesto. Mm. And then he said, and then, you know, I and others realised. He didn't mention her. And I suppose you could see that as a positive thing for her. You know, she is the one who has been in the line of fire over the weekend. It was she who made that speech, that morning scene setter on the 4th of November. Well, you could see it like that, or you could see it like he's trying to disentangle himself from the Chancellor. I think it is probably more of the former, especially because Downing Street sources were briefing out over the weekend that he knew everything. He knew about the OBR numbers all along. He was very, very involved in this budget. But the other way he tried to turn the page, as it were, on talking about whether or not he and the Chancellor misled the public was to talk about how he wanted to reform the broken welfare system.
For too long, our welfare system has trapped people in poverty. And poverty is always